into IRJ, into IRJ, into IRJ, calling into IRJ, one, two, into IRJ, into IRJ, calling into IRJ. You're on there, Marty. Here's WB4AIO, WB4Alpha, India, Oscar, calling your station and carefully listening.
A pleasant good morning to you. This is N2IRJ. A pleasant good morning to you. This is N2IRJ. I twice said a pleasant good morning to you. This is N2IRJ. However, I had the drive set to zero. So now I'm driving it harder. And heck, let me increase it more and find out if it'll take it. And we'll have a really good, strong QSO. There we go. Okay. I bet you're surprised to get a comeback. I heard the tuning up. I even got a sample of it. I was going to name the file and send it to you, and still intend to do it, the old one. Although, probably now you're going to be interested in the latest one, this one right now. I'm yawning. I'll turn it back to you.
Well, good morning, Marty. N2IRJ, WB4AIO. Yeah, you know, there's... I think I'm going to write an article about reducing the splatter and intermodulation distortion in Flex radios using Power SDR. And it's based on your... I'm going to give you full credit, of course, because it's based on your research. But I believe that... reducing that drive control to zero totally, and I mean totally, eliminates intermodulation distortion and splatter. There is none when that drive control is set at zero. WB4AIO.
That is really clever of you. I discovered it by accident and through testing of my own, and that's what happened this morning. I went back. We could have started this QSO 30 seconds sooner, if you know, things would have been different. You know, drive is now set at 86, and I'm probably putting out good power for you. Speaking of other things that I've invented, and that is fan noise suppression. It's not complete yet, at all. Oh. Yeah. I'm in the dark. It's so neat to operate this way, with the the rail on my face and all the other light shows going on. So I'm in the dark with the screen illuminated, and it's really cozy in here. But anyway, I'm yawning again. I discovered a way to decrease the fan noise, and like I told you, if I get this special sound absorbing acoustical material, I'll be able to make it totally tolerable. Let me quit talking, but stay keyed down, that way my AGC will ramp up. Yes, you will still be able to hear a little, but I don't know if you'll be able to realize that it's much less. It's less than before. I took measurements before and after the modification. Let me do it now. I'll be quiet for 5 seconds or so. Okay. I watched the power meter, and it was reading zero much of the time. I realize now how significant my handling noise is, though. I was getting a zero output with fan noise, even though you probably maybe heard a little, but I see I really do need to do something about the handling noise. It's occurring during my transmissions, and you're not hearing it because my voice is overriding it, but it's being there as part of the lows, which is something I don't want. As for you, the band conditions are so good. I mean, they're not excellent, but you're giving me a much better signal than last night, to the point of where I can actually hear your fan in between syllables, sort of. Well, I say you make that determination yourself when you play it back. It is not anything like W2J. Oh, he used to be just so Jimmy May, WA3MAE, Virgil 2. Now it's his initials, JMD, I think. Yeah, is it W3JMD, I think. Yeah, I think it's that. Well, anyway, you know how his fan noise is. So don't worry, you're not approaching anything like that, but I'm just saying it's detectable. And I'm giving you a long QSO so that you might evaluate my modulation. Okay, turning it back to the man who's so big-hearted as to give me credit for that finding. Over.
Okay. Very good. N2IRJ in the salt flats of central New Jersey near the RCA antenna proving grounds. This is WB4AIO in the cool, cool Allegheny Mountains of western Pennsylvania near Beaverdale, where the beavers are just, I mean, everywhere. All over the place, man. Yeah, you are a good 20 over 9, sometimes a little bit more. Conditions are good. And the static crashes are fairly loud this morning. In other words, they are noticeably above S9, maybe 5 over 9 on some peaks from the electrical discharges in the atmosphere. But you're strong enough where I'm not missing a single word. I'm astounded that you're able to run very close to full power with that solid-state amp way down here in the extra band, 3666, without it tripping off. I wonder if something in the weather or the moisture content of the soil has brought the resonance of your antenna lower in frequency. Don't know. But anyway, I suppose you can hear the Sony Vaio fan mixed with the Clipperton buzz and the fan and the Asus Dusty microprocessor fan, which is coming on occasionally. They are reading a little below a minus 20 on the compander meter, which is a good meter of the audio that's actually hitting the virtual balance modulator, the virtual W3DUQ balance modulator inside the Power SDR software. But you do sound like you have reduced fan noise. I don't know what you did. You might fill me in on that, but it sounds it's audible just barely when you stop talking. It's just barely detectable, and it's well below the static. To hear it, I have to listen between the static crashes, and I have to listen fairly intently, even after you stop talking for an extended period of time. So anyway, it's working well. Working well. I'm in the 7.5K mode since the band is totally clear, except for Mother Nature. WB4AIO, listening carefully for your radio station.
I should make a correction and say it was clear when we started the QSO and utilized this frequency. Someone has since moved in on our top, and they're giving me Tweety Bird sounds, but there's such a small overlap that for now, for our better testing, I'll leave the bandwidth alone. Yes, I started off at 7.5, and I didn't know you were there, but just in case you were, I put the receive filter at 7.5, and that way I could hear more than last night when we were being restricted to 6. I really would like to give you a better signal to noise ratio reading, but I'll be truthful as I am with these things, and that is you're only going up to an S8, and the noise floor is just about 5. It's about 4 7/8, you know, on that meter. So basically, we're talking 8 minus 4 is 8. Yeah, 4 is 4. 4 times 6 dB per S unit is 24 dB signal noise ratio. However, keep in mind that this noise floor, even though it's identical to last night's 24, we were in the 6 KC bandwidth. So believe it or not, even though I can't really visually prove it on the metering, I'm telling you that I can hear so much more clarity and detail and crispness to your voice. It's really an improvement. So this was an important test to do in the morning as well. Over.
Well, clarity is very important. If you have clarity, then you don't have to repeat yourself, and you don't have to use phonetics, and you can say let's put it this way: you can convey the same information and the same ideas in less time if you transmit more information, and that if that information is properly received. So there you go. It helps. It's good for a man of few words like me to have clarity. It gives it saves time in your life, so you don't have to say things like Alpha India Oscar too much. So that's what radio is all about, is using phonetics. I've always believed that. Actually, I was just down frequency, and Marty, I was talking to NU9N. First time I've checked in on 3630, and he gave me a real nice welcome to the frequency. And, of course, he has a fabulous, just absolutely beautiful-sounding TS950 SDX, heavily modified. A pleasure to listen to. And he and I agree on so many things when it comes to bandwidth and audio quality and freedom of experimentation in amateur radio. So that was real nice, real, real nice. And then when I got done with my conversation up here, which was on the subject of clarity, among other things, I came up here and retuned, and by golly, there was N2IRJ.
Boy, I wish I would have heard that QSO. What bandwidth did he come back to you in?
I was at 7.5, just like I am now, but I think that, and he said that if I was listening in 7.5, I was probably hearing everything he was transmitting. He didn't specify exactly, but I would guess it was about 7.
Fine business on that N2IRJ. You wanted to know how I quieted it. I found out that there's an adequately large air gap between the fan's intake and the side cover, and there are louvers on the side cover. So I simply placed a small magazine that tightly gets sucked up against the fans, but I leave the last half of the openings open so that they can get air. It's ever so slightly being restricted, not to any significant way. No, there's no danger of my overheating it. the fans that are open, excuse me, the vents which are open are the ones to the rear, which are further from the microphone, but secondarily, they face the Astron power supply. So they have to reflect off the Astron and back in on themselves, and there's some cancellation, and by the time it gets to me, it's very quiet compared to the way it used to be. So getting this much success with this method, I am really convinced that if I can get the acoustical material and build the same structure inside, it will suppress the noise even more, by far. And also, I'll have the advantage of not restricting the airflow in any way. And not that I would have inadequate anyway. There's enough overkill built in here, and I can tell the difference, with my hand, and it's not even detectable. It's just theoretical, and maybe by sound I can hear, you know, this ever slight difference. So anyway, that's how it's being accomplished, and I don't have the insecurities I used to, and I'm willing to drive it harder. I left a pause there. Yeah, it looks like on the Duro, where I used to be giving two, I think, bars on idle with the fan noise, there's only one bar. And that's after it's had time to ramp up, I believe. Boy, am I glad you find a buddy down there that sees things our way. But I was going to say, to answer your Vizor question too, I am on the hairy edge. I can't operate on 3636 anymore. I tried, and I even tried 3642. So gradually something is changing out there. The antenna length is getting shorter or something, and it's going up higher than its original resonant frequency, which was 3930, I believe. That's back when we did the Liberty Net. I figured I'd throw it a few KC lower, you know, and it would help me get down band if I needed to. And it was either 3910 or 3930, but I think it was 3930. And I don't know what it is now, but I think it might have crept up to maybe 3940 or 50 or something. And now I don't know. I simply cannot talk to them at any power level without it tripping out. So to introduce myself again, I'm going to have to make some modifications. The weather makes a difference. It's very sensitive, and it's very accurately repeatable, the kind of trip out thing. With the SGC solid state amplifier, it was fickle. I mean, it had a mind of its own in terms of tripping out with Vizor. Whereas this one, it's very finely, there's a fine line, and if you cross it, you trip it, and it turns out that it's frequency dependent, of course. And I can actually go down to, you know, like maybe 3643 and transmit, and it'll never cut off. But I take it to 42, and then it cuts off, you know. So when the weather's a certain way, especially, and I don't know what that combination is. It hasn't rained. And even when it rains, sometimes it seems to let me, you know, operate momentarily down there by the edge of my skin. So there's the SWR. It's like an RFI problem almost, but much, I think, easier to correct. Hopefully there's no RF. I don't hear any RF on you. N2IRJ.
Oh, wow. N2IRJ, WB4AIO. Interrupt AE. Yeah, I did notice those people moved in down on 3660. The band was totally clear. If they just went down another couple of KC, then they wouldn't be interfering. Oh, well, maybe my signal is weak at their location or something like that. locations, I should say. I shouldn't assume they're in the same location. Have to watch that false plural femme speak that even I fall into occasionally. Well, I sure hope you don't overheat that beautiful new amplifier of yours. I don't know how you... I don't know if I were doing that. I don't know how I would make a judgment that there's plenty of overkill. How would I know? I don't know anything about cooling technology how they determine such things. I mean, I don't know how I would look at something and say, oh, there's plenty of overkill. I can restrict these louvers here and it won't really matter. I mean, I hope you're right. I mean, probably you know a lot more about it than I do. But myself, I'd be afraid that at some point under a high power operation or off resonance operation, or for that matter, AM operation, full carrier AM operation, that I might not have adequate cooling merely because I've, you know, restricted the cooling and made it less than it was before. But I bow to your judgment, and I hope it all works out perfectly for you. I'm going to go check on Clara, so I'll turn the speakers up so I can hear you around the house, but got to make sure she's making progress towards bus time. Into... It's Romeo, Juliet. This is WB4 Aeschylus Icarus Oedipus, AIO.
And two, it's Romeo, Juliet. I will say that I did the fuel test, and I did the test with the laser-pointed circuit board temperature checker, and there really wasn't any difference in temperature. Plus the touch test, everything was cool, and I knew that I would be operating predominantly in the single sideband mode. I realized that solid state, any amplifier will be stressed more with a solid carrier and AM modulation, but I felt that there's plenty of headroom for that too. Also, I've had a course in heat transfer at college, and I understand the equations, and the realities that result from it. Well, the realities that exist and the equations that describe those realities. And I'm not hurting anything. I'm perfectly safe. So by now you've aroused Miss Clara, but one doesn't know. It might take 2 feet on the floor and then an open door or something, at least to get the process begun. I don't know. I hope she feels good though, getting more sleep for a change. Oh, okay, I'll try unkeying now, and hopefully I gave you enough talk time to make it to your daughter's room and get her up for school. Over.
Well, she's been up for a while. She's been up for a while, but sometimes you have to double-check because she might get involved with something and not be aware of the passage of time, and even though she's perfectly ready, not walk out the door in time. So those are the kinds of things I like to keep on top of. Okay, on the cooling, good luck. I wish you well on that, and you certainly are sounding good. I switched to 6 kilocycle receive bandwidth, maybe to be a good neighbor, even though we were here first, I'll switch to 6 kilocycle transmit bandwidth also. I haven't done that yet, but perhaps just in the interest of being a nice guy, I should do that.
I considered that. I considered suggesting what I did last night, moving up 2KC. I've watched the activity in the mornings, and it is possible sometimes for people to be even where we are now, but for the most part, this was the cleanest consistent space during the day, and mostly at night. In fact, only this time in the morning did I, and only intermittently. So maybe I'll do that, but maybe I'll stay at 7.5. I can see the overlap now. I mean, it's really I don't know. It might be important for us to be hard-nosed in the beginning, even though I don't... that's not my personality. But whoever has the frequency first, what I typically do is I go out to 10K and I... ask if the frequency's used, and I also use my VFO and check around, and then only then do I go into ESSB in the reduced mode. So I actually overkill. I actually ask beyond the limits of where I'm transmitting as to where I end up operating. If I try a 10 KC call after I've VFO swept it and pan adapter it, and then I start up. But once I establish that frequency, then it's not really fair for people like that below to come in and interfere. The band is open in other places. Over.
Yes, but you know how people are about having their own special favorite frequencies that they don't want to... give up. They may have told their buddy, listen for me on, whatever the frequency is, listen for me on 3625, or listen for me on 3705, or whatever. And the other guy's just got a receiver on a fixed frequency. I've often wondered how different amateur radio would be if instead of using narrowband modes, and even ESSB is a narrowband mode, ESSB instead of ESSB or SSB or AM, instead we used some sort of time division multiplex, and the time division multiplex signal would be an extremely broadband digital signal using multiple carriers and multiple sidebands that would cover, say, the whole band from 3.6 to 4 megahertz. And when you would have instead of dividing the QSOs up that by frequency, you'd divide them up by some sort of time code system, where even though everybody's using the whole bandwidth from 3.6 to 4 megahertz, a certain pulse repetition rates or certain coding algorithms would allow multiple stations to all fit into the same frequency range. And instead of frequency, you just have, multiple digital channels, just like the multiple digital channels they have on modern digital TV systems, where you have subchannel 1, subchannel 2, subchannel 3. And maybe you could even design a system where if you had enough bandwidth, maybe 3.6 to 4 isn't enough, but if you had enough bandwidth, a wide enough system, you could actually design it so every station had his own unique digital a frequency hopping algorithm or a unique digital pulse repetition rate or something so that you could just set your receiver to receive N2IRJ's pulse repetition rate and nobody else's, and you'd only hear N2IRJ or you'd only hear WB4AIO, or you'd enter another set of parameters and you could hear station A, B, C, or D, but no others. Or maybe you would have it set so you could hear station A, B, C, and D, and then as an alternative, as an option, you could turn on a special calling channel where you could also hear people on calling channel 13 or calling channel 27 or whatever it might be, and then you would announce ahead of time via email or something that your group normally listens on calling channel 17 in addition to listening to the special algorithmic codes of the stations you particularly want to talk to. I don't know. I think something like that could be designed, but it would require the abandonment of existing systems, so probably it's not going to happen. WB4AIO.
November 2. It's Romeo, Juliet. Into IRJ. I'm thinking secondarily, maybe I should be mostly stand up and keep my backbones, especially when I have the tube amplifier back online. But if you wanted, we do have the option of, say, QSYing, say, 2KC up maybe, and that might get us out. I think that we're so non-offensive, there's so little energy in the high frequency portion of our transmission that they don't even consider us to be interference, but I guess they're just not in, they're ordinary frequency restricted radios, and they don't even understand our world. So I think that's probably what's at work. That's what I've historically noticed in the morning, with the exception of when I went down to 3636, where sometimes they go to 3642. And on a blue moon, they'll even go up to 3645. So anyway, I'll keep my bandwidth at 7.5. The static has died down slightly. I still can't give you the world's greatest signal report, but I saw it actually go down to an S3 and momentarily just touch under the line of S3. It probably wants to be something like an S2, but the static is preventing that from happening. The crashes are too frequent.
Okay, I heard most everything you said. Might have missed a word or two. I was just saying goodbye to Clara as she walked out to meet the bus. This is now that she's a teenager, it won't be too many more years I'll be doing that. It's the end of an era. I can remember when it began. It seems like yesterday, when she was 6 years old, 7 years old, going out to meet the bus. Or being driven to school, depending on what school she was going to at the particular time. Yeah, I'm back to 7.5. I think the band is clearing and people are signing off. So the problem was an ephemeral one. WB4AI.
Yes, they are going to work probably, and they're signing off around now. So we can be good neighbors, I think, and stay where we are, maybe. But we'll see as time goes on what happens. But let me clear my throat. Just realized this microphone, the Samson, has an off-on switch. I could have muted it easily and spared you having to hear my throat clearing of the morning. Yeah, in a way I'll miss the quaintness of that, even though there's a frustrating component, too, of having to coax along somebody. But, to be young and sweet and yet so tortured with not even having a clue as to how the world operates. I wish I could go back in body, maybe, to a certain extent. But I would definitely want to keep my mind, even though there's a lot of bad that I understand now that can be depressing, I'd still rather know the whole picture, like we try to see. Of course, we don't even know the whole picture. We just have a better understanding through our research as to what's really going on. And that leads me into telling you about my dream last night, as if you're interested. I'll just highlight it. But basically, I kept going back to some kind of restaurant, and I was trying to either use the shower or the toilet, I can't remember, but it wasn't up to my cleanliness standards, and that was annoying me, and I had to clean it first, and this and that, and anyway, there's something about a dime I needed maybe to make a phone call or something, and I ended up, I couldn't find it, and it got lost. It fell down on the floor and rolled somewhere, and because I was without wheels, my car was stolen, it was taken, and there was a misunderstanding about whose car was who owned it, and there was some other car that I knew was going to get towed away, but it was all over the place in this dream. There was a assault creature like on Star Trek in there that could make itself invisible. Like in the dark, and then it would come up and attack you. Call it a vampire, if you will, because it's the sucking thing all over. You could feel it putting its fangs in different parts of the body, and or at least I was. I don't know if I could say I could feel it, but I knew it. I was aware of it, And it would sometimes attack me on my back and neck, and other times like maybe in my arm, and it would try to like put you in a hypnotic state to just be a victim, and you only had a certain amount of time to run out the store's door and escape it. And I did manage to do that, although the first time it must have stopped before I knew what was going on. It did its whole thing over me and drained me of blood, and but didn't kill me, and that's how I learned to try to fight it off that way. But well, I was trying to call for help, and this beautiful woman, I think it might have been my wife, I was trying to call on 2 meters with a handy talkie without an antenna, and the antenna kept missing, and I would find something and use it and communicate and say where I was and how I needed to be picked up. But I remember that I felt good about the marriage, at least, and I didn't. I think maybe the other person wasn't Laura in the car at a distance coming back to me and going to pick me up. And I was thinking, this is believe it or not, it's like what I read on the internet. I don't forward you the junk email stuff, but you were talking about you used a feminazi term or something, which I didn't even pick up on, by the way. You might repeat to me what that is so that I can avoid it. But anyway, in Time Magazine, I forwarded that to Pat yesterday, and in return, he forwarded me this thing comparing Obama and Putin, and they portray Obama in the feminine role and then some, and Putin as the real he-man. And anyway, this came out of my dream sort of in this way. The article I read associated with what Pat sent was saying about Putin's wife, who is beautiful. They showed a close-up view of her, I guess, when they were first married or something. And then on top of that, rumor has it, and then they showed this other woman, that this is his mistress. And I was thinking, oh, geez, why do those guys of power always have to carry to the extent of screwing up their marriage? I don't know, does his wife tolerate it, or they made an agreement ahead of time that they're both free to, work the land and have all the pleasure, but I don't know, he might have a mistress, and she was even way younger, and she looked unfortunately like sort of the Hollywood trash, I thought. If again, it's into one of those emails that might not even be true. I didn't bother to check it out on any thing. It wasn't important enough to me. But that element came out of my dream, that I wasn't going to be like Putin and be unfaithful. So that ends my dream and long transmission. And you have plenty of time now to evaluate everything, I think, I hope, with these QSOs more and more. And so far, your signal is excellent. The side QRM has ceased, and the band has quieted down ever so slightly, maybe because it's daylight now and there's absorption starting, which is taking away some of the static. But it's not like that one day where I was able to have a noise floor under a negative 130 decibels. It's definitely up in the hundreds today. And So tell me, what was that feminazi term or something that you you accidentally fell for over?
I don't use the expression feminazi, but I'll explain that in a minute. N2IRJ in the Dream Interpretation Net on 666 kilohertz, plus 3. This is WB4AIO. Okay, well, that's quite a dream. One thing that handy, Marty, before I make the rest of my commentary, is while you're dreaming, if there's a computer nearby in your dream, just send yourself an email with a summary of the dream. And then when you'll get it when you wake up in the morning, and it will have a lot of the details that you probably would have otherwise have forgotten. So you might try that technique. That's what I do. Over.
Okay. I do remember other details, but I won't bore you with them. I think an outgrowth of our CUSO last night, where Laura participated, N2JTT, and you're right. Her voice on your recording was, did have sex appeal, and it was really lively, polite, and the nice personality came through, all the things that are real. And I'll say that years ago, when she was even younger, she was on the 2-meter repeater, and the way her voice sounded was so sweet, even with the communications grade FM, it still was detectable as being bright and shiny and the upbeat spirit, you know, attitude on life and all. And she received lots of phone calls, and one was from a dentist. He just started his practice, and you know, I think he would have liked to, you know, get in with her maybe and have a date or something, you know. But when he found out about me, he never called again. I felt sorry for the guy. I was never mean to any of those guys. I always just remembered what it was like to suffer without having someone on my side to give me the support and someone I could be happy with. So what happened is I listened to your recording, even though it was 2 hours. And I think you did edit a few spots. Even at the end, but that's okay. I was completely satisfied. The salient parts were there. It made it very enjoyable to hear Laura's voice. And I think I might have fallen asleep, even though I said I heard the end. The thing stuck in my head because I was relaxed and I was hearing her voice and reminiscing about the good old times on the FM repeater. This is November 2. I'm Romeo Juliet IRJ. Back to you.
Yeah, okay. Very good, Marty. Well, now we need to go into the interpretation phase for your dream, and I think the meaning of that particular dream is very, very clear. And there are really two messages that the unconscious or the other world beyond the veil is trying to teach you through that dream. I think one is you can't depend on VHF. You can't depend on VHF FM handy talkies to communicate in emergency situations when vampires are attacking you, because the damn rubber duck antennas are always breaking off. So the lesson is, number one lesson is always carry your HF 75-meter capabilities with you. Always carry a 75-meter antenna and a 75-meter transmitter or receiver or transceiver of some type on your person so you can get through on 3666 kilohertz. That's of vital importance. Second lesson is always bring a beautiful woman with you. They're very, very handy in multiple situations. So write that down, and if you learn a lesson like that every night in your dreams, I think you're going to be a better person. Just think of all the lessons you're going to learn over the course of the next year. It's pretty awesome. WB4AIO.
Yeah, thanks for the analysis. I didn't think of the first one. Yeah, that was damnable. The rubber duck breaking off at the bottom, and I somehow hooked a coat hanger in there or something, so I could bring the repeater up. But later in the dream, I couldn't even bring the repeater up, and I was really upset. But damn, if I could have only loaded my dream with the base station I have here, I could have communicated with the car. My car has HF ability and an antenna. It used to have SGC 500 watt tuner in it and amplifier as well. Unfortunately, though, the tuner's not able to deal with such a small whip. It has to be at least 23 feet long, which I didn't know, and it's stressing it too much and overheating the coils and the relays to operate where I do. So I'll have to come up with a new plan for the mobile on that. I'm talking about my older car. You know, you made the comment about a beautiful woman being by, and it reminds me of something that the attorneys told me when I used to fight those product liability cases. They said it never hurts to have a beautiful woman on your side next to you there. And believe it or not, when I went to town meetings over my antenna variance to have 160 feet tower, you know, even though we shouldn't have to go through this, you have any height, and unless, you know, the airport is nearby, then you have to over 200 feet have a light on it. Well, I don't even fall under that category, but you know, the town as of 1993 implemented these restrictions, whereas when I first came here, there were none. That's why the existing pole tower that I made has been grandfathered, and they leave me alone. Well, anyway, I had Laura with me there, and I was surprised at how much nicer the people were when there was that, you know, couple setting that all was well, and there was a lot less hostility towards me than when I would do it alone. And I noticed this in another instance being used against us. There was a case where a black man out of Philadelphia sued us for a lot of money, and it was a really big court case, and it was in Philadelphia, and I was the expert witness, and he hired someone, I guess, who was really expensive, and afterwards the jury voiced that by saying they considered him to be too slick because he went up against my engineering analysis, and it was, you know, the credibility that won the case. But in that instance, I guess I made a mistake by telling you about that case. There was no pretty woman, but I won by the virtue of the truth. But the one where it was opposite was the case of when I was on jury duty, and I was deciding that gun case, and I convinced the jury, who was totally wanting to find the man guilty, to return a not guilty verdict. But unfortunately, the negative energy from the jurors was recognized by the insurance company, so they made a settlement right before the verdict came. But the verdict would have been even better, but they really thought it was going to be different. Well, what they did is the usual trick. The insurance company sent two people, a nice-looking couple, you know, man and a woman, you know, from the insurance company, and they monitored every aspect from the rear in a non-threatening way, and they did every psychological trick they could. And since I had to do that for my job anyway in the auto industry, I recognized all the psychological tricks that the other side was using against us. And I even brought that up to the jurors. I said, you know, when they paraded the gun in front of us and said this was the instrument of death by which a young child, you know, was killed, and you know, I said that's all an act. That's to make you go down to an emotional level to make your decision instead of basing it on the facts. And these women on the jury were aghast at what I was saying. They said, no one would be that tricky or do such a thing, you know. And I had to educate them and say, hey, I work in this line with attorneys as an engineering physicist expert witness, and federal courts have recognized me as such and put it into the record permanent recognition. And I am told these tricks. I know about them behind the scenes. They do them. And this thing about having the man and the woman, you know, maybe in their mid-30s or something, come in and make a real nice appearance, that is a psychological trick in and of itself. It wasn't by accident that it was a man and a woman, and they didn't want to believe that at first. But I think I eventually convinced them. I did convince them at least to change their verdict completely around, to which point it fooled the judge. And he said, Mr. Fenwick, you have a unique point of view. Back to you, Icarus, and all the rest.
Yeah, okay, very, very interesting. N2IRJ, WB4AIO. I just turned on my azimuthal map program, which shows the gray line and the areas of the Earth that are in light and the areas that are in darkness, and it looks like a sunrise happened a few minutes ago in New Jersey, and it's about to happen right here in the high hills near Beaverdale, Pennsylvania. So pretty soon absorption is going to be a factor, but maybe it will help us for a little while, because most of the thunderstorm activity, according to blitzortongue.org, is out east of Florida, several hundred miles. And I'm amazed how strong it is, considering it's that far out. But since the sun has risen where the lightning is, where most of the lightning is, even earlier than it rose where you are, perhaps that will create a window where the lightning crashes are attenuated more quickly than our signals are attenuated. And so as we ride the absorption roller coaster down to nothing, perhaps the signal to noise ratio will actually temporarily get a little bit better. But getting back to your dream, you know, one of the unexplained things in your dream is, why was there a shower in a restaurant? That is, I mean, maybe you go to fancier restaurants than I go to, but you know, the restaurants I go to don't have showers. WB4AIO.
Yeah, for some reason, my dreams don't hold me within the bounds of reality, you know, when awake. And by the way, I suspected that you didn't like the term feminazi, and I, too, had my reasons for not using it, but I figured it was an easily understandable Rush Limbaugh term. If he is even the one who invented it, I don't know. But he apparently uses it a lot, or used it a lot in the past. I haven't watched him in 10 years or 20 years or however long it's been. I just, in the very beginning, was made aware of his existence. So anyway, I don't know, it gives Nazis a bad name. And some things Nazis did were good. I suppose that's the angle you're coming at, over.
Well, when I talk about femspeak, that's the term I use, femspeak, I suppose there are many aspects to femspeak, but the one I was referring to was the modern tendency to use a plural pronoun when really only one person is being referred to. For example, we were talking about the people who are slightly lower in frequency from us, and I said, without thinking really, I said something like, I wonder how our upper frequencies are coming in at the other station. The other station might have a weak reception at their location. And really, that's improper. I shouldn't have said that because I was referring to one person. And so I shouldn't say their location. I should say his location or her location or his or her location. I should never say their location when I'm referring to one person. But the feminists have purposely changed our language so we're starting to avoid saying his or her in situations like that. Now, if I was referring to more than one person, then I could say their, but then I should add S onto the end of the word location. Then I should say their locations. And that would make it clear that I was speaking of more than one person. And then, of course, the plural pronoun is quite appropriate. But the feminists, they've been messing with our language to make it so we can't even speak English anymore. And they're not the only ones. WB4AIO.
N2IRJ returning. I understand completely and agree, and I practice that myself. And sometimes I worry a little, not much, but on the Liberty Net, when I'm involved in speaking there, I will make statements that aren't exactly what I want, kind of like what you fell into. I normally am very good about I even correct Laura sometimes because she says there when it's only in reference to one person, it should be his as the default. But at least in my day, that's what I learned. And nowadays, unless there's something in this, they're saying that unless there's something in the sentence that reveals that it's a female, that then you can use her in place of him. But the usual default is to say he or she. Him or her, you know, and that makes it awkward compared. So people end up just saying we or they or something like that, and that's what I sometimes say on the Liberty Net that makes me insecure. I know that I'm speaking in a sense I'm speaking properly, but I'm also technically maybe improper. But if somebody might think, and that is, I will refer to this amateur radio station, and I will say our station, or we did this, and most people are expecting a person from their ham shack to be saying that they did things themselves and it's their own, but I always credit in my mind the advice and guidance and help that you put into this station, so I sometimes say we. And this was a bad habit, especially I heard truckers back in the decades gone by, they'd be alone in their cab in the truck and they're saying, oh yeah, we are now up to exit 16. Meanwhile, there's only one guy in the truck, and saying the word I was too psychologically assertive, maybe, or something. I don't know why people do that. I don't think they know the rule either in English. And to IRJ again, and back to you.
Okay, and to IRJ and the Grammar and Dream Interpretation Net. This is WB4AIO on 3666.00-something. Yeah, well, I guess I'm not too persnickety about arbitrary rules of grammar, but I do think that meaning should be clear, and tradition should be respected because it helps in communication of actual ideas, thoughts, and feelings. And there's something beautiful about the tradition of language also, and I respect that. On the other hand, there are some rules from the past, like the rules against the splitting of infinitives, that I think are kind of silly, so I sort of ignore those. I guess I feel that, being a writer, and being a person who understands language fairly well, I've sort of risen to the level where I can respect the rules that deserve respect and disrespect the rules that don't deserve respect, but I don't come down hard on people. The one thing that really gets me, though, is femspeak and and gay speak. I don't even like to say gay speak because I don't agree with their hijacking of the word gay. But, you know, these people who, for political reasons, want to alter the language and, you know, use the power of the media and the power of the press and the power of the academic establishment to push their foul agendas on everybody else. For example, there's a certain group of feminists who don't like the fact that they don't like the word woman or the word women. They don't like those words because woman has M-A-N, it has man in it. And of course, I'm reasonably sure that the origin of the word is womb man, a man with a womb. So actually, it's an improvement on a man. So they shouldn't object to it. But anyway, they hate men so much, they don't want to have M-E-N in the word women or the M-A-N in the word woman. So they change it, the letter A to the letter Y, and it's women with a Y in it. And they actually carry on as if that's the correct spelling. I mean, it's funny in a way, but I've seen young minds blighted by insanity like that. So I don't like that kind of purposeful, politically motivated change in the language. Gets my goat. I'm against it. And so I'm also against the use of plural pronouns when really you should say he or her. I don't mind saying her for the generic. That's okay. I guess if you obsessively do it, then you sound like you're politically motivated. That I don't like. But if you occasionally do it, I think it's perfectly okay. WB4AIO.
For example, the sentence, it's her baby. Or, maybe not. I should take that back. It's their baby because it took the man as well to be involved, but there are circumstances where there are only certain things that involve a woman's body or something, so by the rules that I was brought up by, you still would say he, but by the new rules you would put in she specifically. What is this woman? There's something spelled with a Y, like yeoman, I don't understand. What word are you saying they use?
Instead of saying W-O-M-A-N, they say W-O-M-Y-N, and that's for both the plural and the singular. They take out the A and they put in a Y. That's the insane feminist language modification they're trying to push.
I see. About 20 years ago, I even thought of this, but I thought as a kid. But instead of saying there and inventing a Siamese him and her together, H-I-R, her, or H, the other combination of, or, and he and she and all that stuff. By the way, the H-E-R-R, that's pretty funny. I just thought H-E-R-R is the German... I think greeting for sir. I've seen that on letters at least before, a professional correspondence. So I think that's what it translates into. Over.
Yes, that is an odd coincidence, definitely. By the way, just as the sun is rising on the east coast of the blighted North American continent, the sun is now going down in East Asia. The sun has set in Vietnam and Laos and Thailand and Cambodia, and it's gradually moving toward nighttime in those areas. Australia's been in night for a long, long time. So anyway, this is the Dream Interpretation in GrammarNet, WB4AIO with N2IRJ. Wonder if there are any breakers. Nothing heard.
I wonder why. Maybe they really believe that is what this net is all about. It's not a net yet. It's just an offshoot of another net and two participants speaking to one another. Sometimes people broke in like last night. I observed the phenomenon you predicted about the signal going down and down. About two transmissions ago, it bottomed out. There was only a one S unit difference between the signal and noise, and now you've since returned. I suspect this is maybe one of the final ones before, in a few hours, the absorption gets so much that it just goes down no matter what period. I lose your signal, or it gets greatly diminished. Over.
Well, it could be. Sometimes it comes in enhanced for a little while before it fades out. And I think what happens is that the height of the F2 layer changes between darkness and daylight. And sometimes the changed height causes a phase cancellation where signals drop out almost completely. And then when the new layer totally dominates, the phase cancellation is gone. And the signal actually comes up for a while, and then the final act is the D layer becomes highly ionized and just absorbs everything. However, we are headed to winter, and so the absorption is less. The D layer has less hours during the day to form itself into its old evil self. And also, we may have passed the peak of the sunspot cycle, so it could be that sunspot numbers will be going down, and in general ionization will be going down. And even though people who are really into DX on the upper HF bands will lament that fact because there'll be fewer openings, on the low bands, 40 meters and 75 meters and 160 meters, you'll actually find lower loss, and you'll end up with the situation we had back in the early to mid 90s when we had conditions where we could reliably talk for hundreds of miles during the day with strong signals right at noontime on 75 meters. I remember getting on with KO4FE and KE2LO and N3GVA, and I was in West Virginia, and of course other stations were in Maryland and Pennsylvania and upstate New York, and had perfect, wonderful QSOs with the strong signal levels right at noon or in the early afternoon. So anyway, just got to get an efficient antenna up there and roll with it, because nobody can change the Kennelly-Heaviside layer, not even Kennelly or Heaviside. They can't change it either, WB4AIO.
Yeah, that's pretty rotten. The ionosphere should have made an exception out of respect and let them at least change it upon their whim. I put my pan adapter in the averaging mode, and I was watching your signal, and it was a lot of fun to see it in that form, along with sometimes the instantaneous peak. I like to see the rapid aspects, but you have to be, you know, really on guard and on watch to see the subtleties. For example, I didn't see the subtleties of your fan noise until I went to the average mode, and I can tell you that there's no single frequency, and at 7.5K it's virtually non-existent. And at the lowest possible frequency, it's at its highest amount. I don't know what that was. It might have been 15 dB or something, 10 dB. And it was a perfect triangle. It was linear. That's what was kind of interesting about it. It didn't have some dips and valleys as I would have expected. It was just downright linear. And you know, geometrically shaped nice. You have a linear noise from, I guess, the VIO PC, and or in combination with whatever else is there. But I'm not saying that it's bad, but I just thought I'd let you know that that's how it looks when you're not talking. Over.
Okay. Very good. I try to engineer the station so that when I'm talking, my voice is somewhat louder than the fan noise. That's my goal. I guess I've achieved that. Yeah, I'm a little disturbed, though. You say you can receive my fan noise when I'm not talking. Does that mean even when I have not depressed the push-to-talk key, you can still hear my fan noise? That's a little disturbing.
Yeah, that should be disturbing. Now, obviously, it's the only one that's depressed, and I think you changed something. That time, it was no longer the triangle pattern. All it was some bunched-up noise on the low end, the first few KC's, maybe 0 to 2,000, and it slightly mimicked the triangular form with diminishing high frequencies, but it wasn't what I saw before. So I must have prompted you to change something.
No, didn't change anything. Maybe the fans are insulted by what you said, and they're purposely bunching up their noise, whatever that means.
Yeah, you're also not allowing enough time for it to ramp up the AGC, so maybe I'm really not seeing it for that reason, too.
Well, I could let it ramp up. Okay, I let it ramp completely up till it stopped going up. And it was reading about 4 watts CB level power, citizen band level power, approximately 4 watts of background noise when I do not speak with the current settings here at AIO Radio, WB4AIO, interim AE.
Well, I thought I was onto something, but now it's back similar to what I said it reverted to, and that is just mostly between the 0 and 2,000 and, slightly tapered, downward as the frequency goes higher. So I guess I have to take back me, although it did exist, oh, it was clear. It was definitely clear during the one transmission that linear... the band, I guess the band really does play more tricks on us than we realize in terms of selective fading and other things that we don't even think about or talk about or even maybe know. But that's one example right there. Why didn't it stay consistent both times when I was analyzing it? Over.
Yeah. Yep. I think selective fading is a significant phenomenon. Some people predict the future with tea leaves scattered in the bottom of a teacup after you drink the tea. Other people do it with tarot cards. We could do it with fan noise analysis that you could read your palm, of course. That's another way of predicting the future. But the really accurate way is to analyze your fan noise, and it actually tells a lot about your personality, a lot about your future life, a lot about your past life, for that matter. I think we should expand the net to go beyond mere dream interpretation and grammar. I think we really need to expand the focus of our net here, WB4AIO.
This time I concentrated on looking at the grid to find out how much the fan noise is, even though it probably didn't fully recover. I will say it's an honest 10 dB because on the pan adapter, the noise floor is showing, about 100, negative 125. So I was able to look on the graduations and repeatedly see that the lower the frequency, it was highest at, the lowest frequency up down to zero. And it was... 10 dB according to the grid. But it's kind of nice though that a mere 4 watts, the band is allowing us to make contact 260 miles, 70, whatever it is.
Yep, that is very true. Very true indeed. Well, what does my fan noise predict about my future life? I mean, is love in my future? Is fortune in my future? Is travel to far-off exotic lands in my future? I want to know.
Yeah, I don't have that card reading ability, but I'm sure for a price you could find someone to give you an answer.
Yeah, I'm sure I could. Right down the road, there's somebody who's willing to interpret. Well, they probably would interpret my fan noise if I laid the silver down on the table. Absolutely. Well, I'm looking at my fan noise when I don't speak. I looked at it on the watt meter. Now I'm looking at it on the transmitter compander meter. Yeah, it's about 22 dB down. Funny, it seems to vary from time to time and day to day. I suppose when the weather gets cold and the house heater is running, it's not even on right now, but when in those times when the heating system is on, probably my noise level will increase, which will deteriorate the clarity of my signal, but probably it's better than freezing. WB4AIO.
Are you saying that the fan in and of itself is adding an extra 20 dB on the low end? Is that what you're saying? Like for me, it was showing one and not quite 1.5 graduations, and I sort of interpolated it because of the changeability, you know, the band conditions and all, and I went to the lower to be conservative and not overly alarm you, and I said 10. So did you come up with a higher amount?
Well, I really don't know what you're referring to when you say 10 dB. 10 dB above the noise, 10 dB below my voice. I'm really not sure what you're saying with the 10 dB. But what I'm saying is I'm just looking at the compander meter when I'm transmitting. And when I talk, it's up to about maybe minus 1 dB or something on peaks. But when I don't talk, when I stop talking, and yet I'm holding the push-to-talk key down, as I am right now, the meter falls to about minus 22, minus 23, minus 24 dB. That's what I'm referring to in my statement. Over.
Okay, in my statement, my noise floor is about negative 125, and I see it go up to, when you're not talking and it's just fan noise, I see it ramp up to grid squares. That would be 20 dB. So it's actually 100 times worse than or 10 times worse than what I first told you. But again, you're so many graduations above that that the overall signal noise ratio, it's no problem.
Yeah, your signal is up right now, and the static is down. It's exactly as I predicted. I'm speculating, but probably the height of the ionosphere has changed, and at this moment, it's favoring propagation between us, and this propagation to the static out to the east of Florida is greatly reduced. So right now, the signal-to-noise ratio is at the best it's been since we began this QSO.
Yeah, from my noise floor, when you're not talking, you almost make it to 6 graduations. Yeah, I'm hearing you well. Into IRJ.
WB4AIO. Enter a May.
Yeah, that time it was only a 4 graduations of vertical. You know, taking you from the noise floor of negative 125 to maybe negative 90 or something like that. Except when you whispered. Yeah. It must be fun. Oh, yes. You know what? Speaking of that, in my dream, I was being confused with being you. People were thinking that I was you, and they were accusing me of things, and I swore to them that I wasn't guilty of what they were saying, but I can't remember what it was. It was it's fading so much by now. Anyway, I think it had something to do with the I was the only person complaining about that store having a vampire or something like that, and they were trying to keep it a secret. And I think they're trying to blame me for defaming their character, and they're going to sue me or something. I don't know. But yeah, I remember now that I was you kind of in the dream. I think I was in my own body, but you know, that aspect reared its ugly head. My, what you have to go through to get a restful night's sleep. November 2, I'm Romeo, Juliet. Wonder if that would stick. It's a clever one, which I had thought of using myself, but it sounded too egotistical, I thought. But when you said it today, I kind of liked it, because I like the mating. I like Romeo and Juliet to be able to be together in happiness, and I just wish I could do something with the I, not have to put an apostrophe M on it. Of course, if you compare it to WA1HLR, I'm definitely more precise on describing my call sign. Over.
Yeah, that's a good set of phonetics. I like those phonetics. They're good. But I think turning the N2 in your call sign into the word into, and then having the rest be interesting radio junk, I think that's good too. In other words, you're Marty and you're into interesting radio junk. Over.
Yeah, that's another one. It's just trying to get the person to remember to put the I in front of the N.
Yeah, you're an Italian station. You're IN2IRJ.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's time for Kevin to go get a drink, so Kevin's going to go get a drink.
I need a drink, too. I'll go get my drink. I'm back, but if you're in the middle of a swallow, no need to answer. I'm into radio junk. Into IRJ. Into radio junk. I'll have to think about that. It is appropriate, especially for this service, to have that one instead of the Romeo and Juliet. But then it's kind of a natural to have Romeo and Juliet be together. That's a rare find. There's that damn eye. What do we do with it?
Well, no, Marty, the N2, by the way, I got my vitamins too. The N2 stands for into. N2 sounds like into, so N2 is just into, and then IRJ is interesting radio junk. So the total thing is into interesting radio junk, WB4AIO.
the moment, I think I like that one better for the community that I'll be speaking with. And I don't know whether it would be confusing for the I to be I'm, but I think the I part would work. But like I said, it's kind of like an egotistical thing, saying that you're Romeo.
Yeah. Well, also, you could just be into Insane Radio Junkie. That would be a good one.
Yeah, that's not too disparaging, and it's certainly not egotistical. Into Indie Romeo Junkie here.
Well, no, not India Romeo. That's too conventional. It's Insane Radio Junkie.
Yes, I am the Insane Radio Junkie. I wrote the book, just like Vic wrote the book on Beverage Antennas. Speaking of which, on your recording, boy, I got an appreciation of how weak the One Land station was last night at your location, and it I guess paralleled how my westward pointing Beverage was, and it just underscored the emphasis that Vic told me that, you know, that there's no one antenna that suits all things, all purposes, and that's why he designed not just the Beverage, but the active steerable null Beverage. And he would furiously turn a VFO knob, but it was really a capacitor or resistor or something, you know, and a variable resistor, and he would home in on the signal. I mean, all these years since 1974, that's how he used to do it. I don't know what he does now, but he would steer it, and he would be able to pull the people in that way. And of course, I made a 40 meter version of that, but it required a lot of work, you know, making a the toroidal coil. You had to use a special material, and it only goes up to a certain number of megahertz, and you can't get any material, doesn't exist on the planet to our knowledge, even in consulting with the ceramic the company up in Jersey, North Jersey, that sells the stuff, Ceramic Magnetics Incorporated, I think. And somewhere I have the direct manufacturer in one of these boxes, but I can't remember it. I gave it to WB at RAV, but by now he's probably lost it, because he was going to try to get it right from the source at the cheapest price if possible, if they'd sell it to him. But I've now lost it. The people that truly make it, the factory. What was I going to say? Did I say something? I wanted to make a point here, and I don't know if I reached it. Over.
That's okay. You reached a point. Maybe it wasn't the point you wanted to reach, but you reached a point, just like we all do. No matter what happens to us, we always reach some destination. It may not be the one we were aiming for. It might even be the opposite of what we were aiming for, but there it is. It's a destination. We are in a place, and things have happened, and there are surroundings. And we are alive. Hey, that's the main thing. There's a 1 kilohertz tone. Perhaps someone is tuning up in preparation to joining us, WB4AIO.
Yes, I see that 1 KC tone. It's pretty low. And by the way, so is your tuning up pulse height. But you are probably tuning up at lower power, so that's the reason. And I captured it on the Audacity recording so you can see what it looks like, although you probably already know. And, you know, someday as an experiment, if you want, you could put the pulse on with full power. And maybe at the end you do, but even that way, maybe due to the response times, the settings you have, it doesn't allow you to see true peak power. at least in the span that my pan adapter was set to. I remembered in the beginning of this CUSA what my point was going to be, and now I think I've forgotten it for the second time. It had to do with here it is. The guy in one land, I remember, this is it. The guy in one land was really weak to you, and he was really weak to me with my westward pointing beverage because of my location. And when I went to the vertical, the noise level went up, but his signal to noise ratio dramatically improved. And I heard that fact when I heard him directly from your radio station on the recording and compared it to what you broadcast from when I transmitted his audio. In other words, I recorded him, played it over the air, and I was giving you a strong signal. So when I heard my recording over your station with your strong signal, he really sounded strong and readable. But what you were faced with trying to hear was difficult. And by the way, did you edit that a little bit? I don't mind if you did. I mean, that other recording that you edited, it was long. It did save me a lot by your cutting stuff up. But boy, that's a lot of work.
No, I didn't edit it at all. Stand by a second. I want to hear this signal. That's actually not a tune-up carrier. That's actually an AM signal. Whoever it is making a very long old buzzard-style AM transmission because it's been on continuously for several transmissions here. And so there must be an AM QSO. The guy sounds vaguely like he has a southern accent, so perhaps there's actually an AM QSO down south somewhere that is on this frequency. And that's little hard to understand the words in the AM mode, but the carrier tone is quite audible. I guess they're not really bothering us, and I hope we're not really bothering them, but maybe they can't even hear us. I've noticed that a lot of people who have low dipoles and inverted Vs, they just don't hear much, especially during the day and in the early evening and the late morning. They don't hear much outside of like a 200-mile radius, and they can be heard outside the 200-mile radius, but they just don't appear to hear much. I hear that up on the AM window where you have stations in Ohio and Illinois, and they'll just come right on when there's a QSO on the East Coast or in New England. They'll just come right on the frequency, and I don't think they're doing it on purpose to interfere, but, you know, I just think they cannot hear the East Coast. They cannot hear New England. And of course, I'm here in the middle and I'm hearing both of them. But probably it's a situation something like that. This guy may be down in North Carolina or something and just cannot hear us. And it may not even be an antenna issue. It might be an antenna issue coupled with high local noise level or something. But that's not very heavily modulated, but it is an AM AM signal, WB4AIO.
Yeah, it's right at the noise floor, almost for me, but then again, I have a westward pointing beverage. Let me switch antennas, and I'll listen to him on the vertical, and just give me, drag your feet about 5 seconds so I'm able to see if the carrier is still there. Okay, I'm on antenna one now, and I'll unkey.
Adding to credence to the idea that it's an old AM transmitter is the fact that the frequency is drifting.
whichever station is talking now, they are so low on the vertical. I was expecting to see a huge rise, but they're just a peep squeak. When they first came on, it might have been a different station, and they were much higher. So I switched back to the beverage, and it maintained itself. It was about a break even. So I don't know where they are. And as for the frequency, when you said 1,000, I didn't exactly see them there, but I have trouble adapting to this 400 hertz horizontal scale. I could have sworn that at one time I turned it into something other than that, where I could just go 2, 4, 6, 8, you know, 10, and count it easily, instead of, you know, 400, 800, 1,200, and so forth. Could they be varying as much as 200 hertz? Because I could have sworn at one point I saw it go down as low as 800, and then I've also seen it at 1,000. Over.
Well, the one that was talking before was at 995 hertz below our frequency. The one that's talking now is at about 1,052 hertz below our frequency. And they're not absolutely stable either. So it's two stations, neither one of which is really strong enough to copy here. It's really not bothering you at all, so I'm not going to complain. Probably they don't even notice our presence, would be my guess.
Yeah, the way AM operates, I don't think they even hear us, and I'm glad. I don't want to bother them. I was going to say, in the one recording you sent me where you had the AM QSO in extended and enhanced single sideband, you were using SAM, I could tell, instead of AM. You were using synchronous auto amplitude modulation, because when the guy would first get up, I would hear a carrier sounding like squeal. Heterodyne, it would go, woo, and then it would lock. Over.
Oh, yeah. That's one disadvantage of synchronous AM, is sometimes people aren't on exactly the same frequency, or your bandwidth is skewed one way or another to eliminate interference. Sometimes there's a brief burst of a carrier sound, a heterodyne sound, before the synchronous detector achieves lock. However, the synchronous detector is somewhat cleaner overall than the diode detector, even though the diode detector in Power SDR is a virtual diode detector and is a mathematically perfect diode detector. Nevertheless, even the perfect diode detector gives a little distortion in selective fades, and the synchronous detector eliminates that. But it has some disadvantages. Every now and then you hear a bloop sound as it achieves lock. But anyway, yeah, I was using synchronous detection. I was transmitting in AM during that QSO, though. You said extended single sideband. It was a good wide bandwidth, but it's definitely AM. Both of us were on AM. KK4IBG was running one of those classy AM transmitters with the pulse duration modulation applied to FETs, one of those transmitters that's 98% efficient. You can put your hand right on the heat sink and it feels like it's room temperature, even at a kilowatt out. And he was using a Flex 5000A for receiving and for a VFO, but his actual transmitter was a classy PDM rig. And then the other guy in the QSO was running a screen-modulated DX60 into some kind of a linear amplifier. I forget what kind of linear. I think it was a pair of 4400s as a linear amp, amplifying the low power of the screen-modulated Heath kit. And, of course, I was running the SDR-1000 because it's the only rig I have, WB4AIO.
You caught me taking a swig of chocolate milk. And you know what? I had a brain malfunction, but only half of a brain malfunction. I totally had it in my mind that it was amplitude modulation, obviously. And I remember that. And yet I'm so used to saying the mode that we operate that I blurted that out and called it sideband. Yeah, I know it wasn't. Yeah, but I'm glad you brought that to my attention. I don't want to encourage that habit Maybe it's due to the early morning hour. I'm not totally awake yet. I was going to ask how. I need lessons for this radio. And the best thing to do is little by little, day, you know, by day as we talk, or week by week, whatever, you know. For example, I was relying on the pan adapter, and I couldn't tell in that great of a detail, like you did, what their exact frequencies were. So let me guess, you're using the scope function, or the other program, over?
Right now, as long as you're not talking, I can read out the frequency in those blue digits right underneath power SDR's own pan adapter. Stand by, I'm going to do it again. Yeah, it reads minus 938.5 hertz, because even though it's not very strong, that carrier is the strongest signal in my pan adapter, and the little counter actually reads the frequency. So, you know, it's actually giving me an indication. It's, you know, it's not perfectly accurate, but it basically is telling me which bin is getting the carrier in it. And so plus or minus, you know, 25 hertz or so, it is accurate. And so I was just reading it out in the blue digits at the bottom of the power SDR pan adapter. I could do the same thing with my audio spectrum analyzer, though, if I, you know, which I feed from the audio from the VIO into the other computer and use that audio spectrum analyzer. That also would tell me what frequency, you know, a heterodyne was on. But right now, even though I have that running, I'm not looking at it. On the main computer, I'm looking at my azimuth map program, which is showing me that the sun is rising in the eastern tip of Minnesota right now, WB4AIO.
Okay, I'm seeing 929 hertz as the first number.
Okay, our time bases are not synchronized because I'm reading minus 938.5, but whatever, they're within about 10 hertz of each other. Our bin size may be different because we may have power SDR set up slightly differently, and you're using a different sound card and so different computer, so our configurations may not agree exactly. Those blue numbers at the bottom of the pan adapter are not intended to be exactly accurate. They're only approximate, so nothing to worry about there.
Is it only a tool that can be used with an AM carrier? What if it's a modulated AM carrier? For example, when I'm speaking on sideband, or when you're being received on sideband, it's fluctuating all over the place. I need a lesson, I guess, again, on the bottom right blue numbers. You know, for example, in the middle, I'm seeing it dance around from like 30 dBm to 4 dBm and stuff like that, and my megahertz reading on the right, it's 3665, but then the last three are dancing around like 911, 727, and then things like that. Over.
I think what the pan adapter is trying to show you the fundamental frequency of the largest signal that is present within its range. In other words, the first indication is the frequency with reference to the F0 carrier point. The second reading is the level in dBm of that same signal, and the third reading is the actual RF carrier frequency. But again, it's not precise. It's only approximate because it goes by whatever bin has the strongest signal. Over. And when you hit it with a strong single sideband signal, it's going to dance around all over the place because there is no one single carrier. It will tend to, you know, with my voice, the fundamental lowest frequency signal will sort of look like a carrier. and it will try to read that out. But even that moves around, so it just jumps all over the place.
Yeah, I saw it go up to a 51 and a 5300 hertz, so I know you're at least doing that and more. And that carrier reading on receive that's with us, I think it was 30 dB something. I'll have to tell you next go around.
I wonder if I looked up on the internet, AMNet on 3665, if I would find out if they've ever published anything about their get-together. I never knew that 3665 was an AM frequency, but wherever these guys are, it must be.
My hesitation was to get a good reading on them, and it's bouncing between a negative 121 dB to a negative 127 dB. So if I were to give a signal report to the guy, what would I say, that he's at negative 125 dBm?
Better just to read your S meter. Most people don't understand dBm, so just tell him what he is on the S meter. That makes sense to most people. Although you have to qualify it by the fact that, you know, you're using a beverage, so the reading's going to be lower, unless you're using the vertical right now, of course.
I'm back to the beverage in favor of you. The rightmost blue numbering, that is bouncing sometimes as low as 3665, you know, like 0.9 or 0.7 or something, like I'm low in frequency. But it's jumping all over the place, high and low. The overall average is, I guess, 3666. We did calibrate this rig. Over.
Yeah, well, if I transmitted an AM carrier, it probably would read very close to 3666 because that would be the strongest single frequency in your PAN adapter, and it would attempt to analyze that as to its frequency and level. But when I'm talking on single sideband, there's nothing to lock onto. The strongest component is what it tries to read, and that changes from every second to every second. Apparently, there is some Ontario AM net on 3665. I wonder if what we're hearing is from Ontario. What I heard when the signal was stronger was sounded like a southern accent from the USA, but I could have been mistaken. It was awfully hard to understand. It was not a real clear signal demodulation at my location. This is WB4AIO.
Earlier on, you mentioned something about a slide or two, and that's how you came out with a 93 or 83 or whatever number you gave me, cycles. Tell me about that slider, N2IRJ.
I have no idea what you're talking about at the moment.
I thought you maybe used the vertical line, some kind of, movable cursor, like asymptote, you know, where you could scroll it over, you know, drag it over with the mouse or something, and put it right in the center of their carrier, and then have a readout somewhere of what exactly their center frequency was.
Well, a Power SDR does have a feature called Zero Beat. It's over near the, it's slightly above the XIT and RIT controls, and that only works in AM or CW or FM or other carrier modes. But if you're in the AM mode, it when you have a strong signal you're receiving that is the dominant signal on the frequency, if you press the zero beat button, it will attempt to precisely zero beat that other signal. But that does not work on single sideband. It does work on AM, however.
Okay. I've managed to learn how to VFO lock, but I did at one point find the RIT. Okay, I found it, and the XIT. Yes, yes, with Al, I know that I alarmed you when I just turned my VFO and went down 10 hertz. You picked that up right away. I think in the future, yeah, what I'll do is I'll just stay on the frequency and use the RIT, and I'll stay on the correct frequency and help the guy navigate back to where he should be using that control instead.
Anyway, do you see the zero beat control?
I just see in this mode XIT and RIT, they're both set to zero, VAC 1 and VAC 2.
Now you have to look slightly above the XIT control. Above it there's an IF to V control, and above that is the zero beat control.
Now I do see that.
But again, that only works in AM. I almost never use it though, because in AM, if somebody is off a few hundred hertz or something, I don't want to follow them. What I do is I just stay locked on an exact frequency, and I hope they zero beat me. Because when you're dealing with people using older transmitters, especially stuff that's pre-1970s, it's often only approximately know what frequency they're on. So it's better to have them zero beat me. I know what frequency I'm on within a few hertz, and then have me zero beat them. So I seldom use that control, but it's there. WB4AIO.
Yes, early on in the QSO, for that very reason, I said to Al to announce to the group in advance that they shouldn't track him with their VFO. If anything, just use RIT. Let the frequency stay fixed. And then it came up later in the QSO, and he said, well, he's doing it for Marty's sake, recording, you know, it would make the recording, you know, so much harder. He didn't explain about having to tune RIT to everybody if everyone was following everyone else around, but I'm glad he did then bring it up. But someone else hadn't heard my saying that earlier, and he didn't announce it in the beginning like I wanted him to, but it came up and it all got resolved. There was no problem with that recording.
Yeah, when you did follow him though that once, it was not 10 hertz, it was more like 110 hertz.
Oh my God. Was I off or was he off that much?
Well, I think at that exact point, he was off that much, and you followed him, and then you were off that much. But it was only for one transmission. I did not bother to follow you.
Okay, that's right. I forgot. When you and I are dealing with it, we deal down to the single decimal place. And when I'm dealing with older AM gear, I have to actually deal with in the hundreds. So yeah, he had it rough. Towards the end, what he was doing is he was assuming that everyone else had the correct frequency, so he would follow them, and for the rest of the net, it sounded like he was on frequency, or very close at least.
Yeah, I think that the Swan Signet drifts more at the beginning when you first turn it on, but after an hour and a half or so, it stabilizes somewhat. And I think that whereas he was varying maybe as much as a couple of hundred hertz from transmission to transmission early on, later that variation was down to maybe plus or minus 50 hertz, and I think he was continually adjusting it so that right before he transmitted, he had got the other guy tuned in perfectly, and he was presuming that the other guy was right on 3995, which was a correct assumption, and it It was intelligible. It was never, it was seldom perfect, but it was intelligible and it was usable, and you could understand every word he said. He must have been using the amplifier with the Swan because it was not an, it may have been an inferior stability problem, but there was not an inferior signal strength problem. He was about 20 over 9 here throughout the net, WB4AIO.
So you concur with my theory that he was tracking them, and with most modern digital ones, they're close enough for government work. But then secondarily, you said you also mentioned this, the warm-up. I figured he probably already knew that, and he turned the rig on hours in advance to get it to warm up. And I that's why I came to the conclusion that he was manually doing it the whole time he was going through the effort of that. Bless his heart.
Yeah, that's why I said by the end of the net, I'm sure he had carpal tunnel syndrome.
I think I do remember hearing that. That's a good one.
I think the most unstable transmitter I've ever owned was the BC-610, although the Collins TCS transmitter, which was another World War II era transmitter, I think that one came a close second. The Collins TCS, had a free-running oscillator, and this was in the days before Collins had developed its PTO. And the oscillator was pretty drifty, and it was compounded by the fact that on CW they keyed every stage. They keyed the final, they keyed the driver, and they even keyed the oscillator. They keyed them with these huge clanking open frame relays, and when you keyed that transmitter on CW, it was like blue, 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 blue. It was going all over the place with, and of course the relays introduced unbelievable key clicks in addition to the chirp. And the drift, it was, oh my God, that Collins TCS, what a memorable signal it produced. And then the BC-610, I never used the BC-610 on CW, but I did use it on AM. And they had a choice on the exciter control panel on the BC-610E. To run crystal control, which use these giant crystals, they're like four times the size of an ordinary crystal with banana plugs on the bottom of them, I guess to take all the heat that a high power oscillator might induce in the crystal. And or you could switch it to what they called ECO. They didn't even call it a BFO, they called it an ECO, electron coupled oscillator. And that thing had hum, it had AM hum, it had FM hum, it drifted, and when you modulated the transmitter, it wobulated it all over the place. Oh my God, it was totally unacceptable. Eventually, I got a Technical Materiel Corporation master oscillator, double oven master oscillator, and that is when, and then I fed that into the crystal socket, and that was a good VFO, very stable, more stable than most of its era by far. But when I had that original ECO on there, that was just, it was almost supernatural how ragged and horrible a carrier it produced. It was an embarrassment to operate that, and I only did it once or twice before I concluded that I could not allow my station to put out a signal like that, WB4AIO.
N2IRJ. That's why I think sideband had such a bad reputation in the beginning, and now today we can so beautifully have fidelity and power conservation and less bandwidth, and it's great. The meter in the bottom right in blue, dancing around during transmit and receive. Maybe you could give me an explanation of that. It's roughly around 3666, although when I'm transmitting here, it's saying 3661 sometimes. Am I really jumping around in frequency that much? Or what's going on here? And will the thing be more stable once I install the rubidium crystal oscillator? Over.
No, that's like I say, that's just the pan adapter trying to lock on to the strongest bin. And it's telling you the strongest bin in the pan adapter is at this frequency at this moment. And that will depend on your voice. And so that's what those three readouts are. The frequency with reference to F0 of the strongest bin, then the level in dBm of the strongest bin, and then the RF frequency of the strongest bin. That's all it is. It's the strongest bin. And that's why it responds to the strongest carrier in your passband, if there is one. And if there isn't one, if you're transmitting single sideband and there's no carrier, that thing's just going to dance all over the place.
I see. So when it went down to 3661, it must have meant that I had a 5 kilohertz predominant factor in my voice.
That is exactly correct.
Which I would have been denied with communications grade audio.
Yep. No doubt about it. And if you put your cursor over the pan adapter, then you'll get three other blue numbers over on the left, directly underneath the pan adapter. And those three numbers are reading the frequency and the level where your cursor is. And that's something that you can use if your tired eyes have a hard time reading the frequency of a place on your pan adapter dial. You just put your cursor at that place and it will tell you the level where the cursor is, it will tell you the frequency with reference to F0, and it will tell you the RF frequency where your cursor is. So that's what the three left numbers on the pan adapter will give you.
I can manually drag something and analyze it that way?
You don't drag it, but you just hover. You just hover your cursor as it forms the crosshairs when your cursor is over the pan adapter. And the three left numbers are telling you what the frequency and level are where your crosshairs are, and you can put it anywhere. You don't have to click it, you just hover.
I'm doing that now. I guess since there's no carrier anymore, that's why I can't pick it up. It's just jumping all over the place.
Well, the left numbers won't jump. If you just let your cursor hover in a single position, they'll just stay fixed. They will not jump at all. The left three numbers will stay totally stable.
On mine, they're not. Whether it's transmit or receive. For example, I saw 23 hertz, 9.3 hertz, over 3,000 hertz, 3,800 hertz, 3,900 hertz, 4,000 we broke into. Back to you.
Nope, you're not looking at the left three numbers. You're looking at the right three numbers. I'm talking about the left three numbers.
Oh, excuse me. Let me pan. This is the question I was asking you before, and I was calling it an asymptote, but it's crosshairs. Okay, now I can tell how you homed in so perfectly on that carrier. Yes, yes. If we would have invoked a carrier null, then we would have had that exploded view, and we really could have detected what his exact frequency was, as long as it was stable at that frequency. Over.
Yep, that's right. Anyway, it's a nice tool. It's perhaps not up to the level of the very top grade laboratory instruments, but it's far beyond anything I've ever owned, and it is just as good as the laboratory instruments of a few years ago. So it's a very nice tool. I didn't actually use the crosshairs to to figure out the frequency, though. What I did when the AM carrier was stronger than it is now, if it even is there now, I just waited till you were not talking, and I paused, and the carrier was strong enough to make the readout at the lower right show me what the frequency was approximately.
From time to time, it is important and probably good practice to allow pauses like that. And then you're able to take the readings that, like you did. Well, you know what the future probably should have been for the latest version, and for all I know it is, maybe they have smaller bin sizes. Is that what we need to have even more precision?
Well, as far as those readings are concerned, yes, you would want smaller bin sizes. But I don't know. I don't know if they have increased the bin sizes or decreased. I mean, decreased the bin sizes. I don't know if they've done that. Of course, there are other ways of measuring frequency, but the pan adapter method is just very approximate. It's within, you know, 20 or 30 hertz. That's good enough for what you want to do with it. But if you make the bin sizes very, very small, for example, if you make them, let's pretend that the bin sizes are 30 hertz now. If you make them 10 times smaller, you're still only going to be within 3 hertz, and you're going to multiply your processing load by 10. That seems like an unreasonable trade-off just to get 3 hertz accuracy, which isn't that great to begin with. Probably just using the pan adapter as an approximate method of frequency measurement, and then using some other method like tuning the signal in if you want to get a more precise method is probably more reasonable. But anyway, I don't know how they've changed the bin sizes in Smart SDR. I'll have to study up on that, but I just have no idea.
But you think our bin sizes are 30?
Well, you know, probably if I looked it up somewhere, I could figure it, I could find out. And I don't know for sure if it varies, if the bin size varies with the different settings in the on my sound card. That I also don't know. But here's what I do know. When I'm listening to a broadcast station, for example, broadcast stations on the HF band, they're not always exactly on frequency. But I notice that if they're right on frequency or very close to being right on frequency, my pan adapter always says minus 1 hertz. I know that's not exactly true, but it always says minus 1 hertz. However, if I get one that's off frequency, or if I purposely tune off frequency to make it read, the next reading is minus 29.7 hertz, if I'm not mistaken. So that's almost 30 hertz difference. So I'm thinking that maybe my bin size is around 28, 29 hertz, something like that.
Smart. Logical. Yeah. As processor speeds increase, well, unfortunately, we won't be able to retrofit. We'll just have to stick with what we have. But I don't have any CPU speed problems. I mean, I think I have the ability to handle maybe 10 times as much. I could do it, but it wouldn't really buy me much. You know, the average amateur radio operator isn't going to maybe even care if I'm giving them 30 or 3 resolution. But since I come from an environment of scientists and laboratory-grade equipment from Oak Ridge National Laboratory, I'm used to the stuff that goes way down into the decimal places. And then this is close enough to that it gives me the thrill of being in control. Like somebody said down band to me on 3636 or 42, 3642, they said, you know, once you get one of these radios, you can't go back. You just feel like you have such lack of control and you're operating blind when you use just a conventional communications grade box radio without having the panoramic display and so forth. I need to learn about some of the other displays too and how to read them. For example, that waterfall I never understood. I thought I understood it on that shortwave site in the Netherlands or something that we used to play with a little. And you could, I'm not sure if you could transmit it on or no, I guess you could just receive. And but mine, I just don't even know how to read. A couple of the other ones too. But I don't want to overload my brain with too much all at once. But little by little, you can teach me what each one of them does. Over.
Well, I almost never use the waterfall. This is WB4AIO. But basically, the different colors show different signal strengths. And so your x-axis is still frequency. But the waterfall scrolls slowly. And so you can see the change of signal strength over time. And that can be helpful in certain situations. You can analyze bandwidth versus time. You can also sometimes actually see the presence of very weak signals that your ear cannot detect, because the color will be subtly different in a certain spot, even though it just sounds like noise to you, and that could indicate the presence of a very weak digital or CW signal, which possibly could be decoded using some of the sophisticated software that's available out there. But I almost never use the waterfall display. If you want to measure frequency and you have your rig accurately calibrated to WWV, and particularly if you're using a rubidium frequency standard or one of those Marion oscillators, which I have but have not installed yet, then you can use the phase display to lock right in on the precise frequency of a carrier, as long as it's reasonably strong. As long as it's reasonably strong, the carrier, you can actually see the carrier vector rotating around your F0. And when it rotates at a very, very slow rate, then you know you're within, say, 1 hertz of the correct frequency. And if you get it to get the vector to absolutely stop, then you know that your F0 is way under 1 hertz difference from the transmitted. So using the phase display, or even the scope display, because you can see the amplitude right up and down, actually, at a sub-audio rate. Using the scope display or the phase display, you can get very, very close to what the actual frequency of a transmitted carrier is. That doesn't do you much good for single sideband. With single sideband, you sort of have to trust your ears and the integrity of the harmonic structure of the transmitted audio to tell you what's going on.
That transmission, I used it. I'm looking at it right now while I'm talking. And while I'm talking, it makes an entirely different envelope. It makes a big pink envelope, 7.5 kc wide, with borders that are red, followed by white. On your pan adapter reading, it was blue and white, and then yellow near the carrier point, with sometimes a red superimposed in the center of the yellow. I think another one that I should look at is the histogram. I heard the guys speaking about it down below on frequency, and they were saying about the different colors, and I didn't know how to interpret that, but I did look at that before, and I could go there again, I guess even right now. By the way, right now, enough time has elapsed that I can tell you between like 3658 and 3666, roughly, it's all pink, perfectly pink. And then only off to the edges do I see some spikes going outward. I don't know, maybe those are my sidebands. Well, no, excuse me, my spurious emissions at a very low level or something. I don't know. I don't really know how to read this. And backing up one other thing before I go to histogram, downband, the old timers were talking about changing frequency, and the newcomers, the non-code guys and stuff, didn't have a clue. When they were speaking in Greek to them, they were saying about, oh yeah, when I wanted to change frequency, I'd bring out the Ajax and I'd go up. And what I was thinking he meant is that wasn't it that with you'd shave the crystal a little bit, you'd rub it, you know, just a little bit to take a little bit off and make it resonate at a higher frequency, and then there was some way of making it go back down if you didn't go too far. I forget, was it putting talcum powder in there or something? I don't remember. But what were those tricks? Do you remember to make it go up and down? And it, actually, I think you should have had you'd have to have something abrasive. I think Ajax didn't have anything abrasive in it, but maybe back in those days it did. Over.
Ah, yes, Ajax, the foaming cleanser.
Yeah, well, I think Ajax is mildly abrasive, and I've done it. You mix a powder cleanser with a water, and you wet the crystal, and you just rub it with your finger back and forth, and then you carefully make sure it's clean, how all the debris is off of it. You rinse it, and then you dry it, put it back in the crystal holder, and you actually have made the crystal slightly thinner, and it will oscillate. If you haven't damaged it anyway or made the abrasions in an uneven manner, then it might stop oscillating. But if you haven't done that and you've done it carefully, the crystal will then oscillate at a higher frequency. It's hard to predict, though, how much rubbing produces how much frequency change. And if you go too far, you may be out of luck. Some people say you can rub a little pencil graphite just to turn a pencil sideways and cover the surface of the crystal with a thin layer of graphite, and you can move it back down in frequency. But it seems to me that that would be the layer of graphite would add an element of instability, and I do know that sometimes the layer of graphite can prevent the crystal from oscillating at all in certain oscillator circuits. So it's a combination of art and science, but I have done it. I think I remember doing it when I had one of my earlier crystal control transmitters. Probably when I was using the Viking Valiant with crystal control during my novice days, I think I moved a crystal onto a desirable frequency, and I actually did succeed.
Wow. Was it, how much rubbing did you do? I mean, I think probably there's, you didn't use a micrometer or anything, right? It was even smaller than that, I assume. What is the shape of it? Is it rectangular? Is it a what's the crystal look like? See, back in my day, when my dad wouldn't let me have an amateur radio, I couldn't experience that. I had to be stuck with CB, and they just had to pop in little crystals which were sealed, and I couldn't change them if I wanted to. So, at least I knew of no way to unsolder the can and all that stuff. So anyway, what would you do? Like 10 rubs all over if it's say rectangular in shape? What was its shape and how much did you rub over?
Well, you're talking about something that happened over 40 years ago, and I don't remember exactly how long I rubbed it, but I don't think it was that long, maybe a few minutes at most. The whole operation didn't take more than an hour, including disassembling the crystal. And I used I was using FT-243 crystals. Those things, at least the ones I had, quite often just had three or four screws on the front. You open it up, there's a holder, which included a spring holding the quartz crystal element, which is a very thin, almost paper-thin rectangle of white, frosty-looking quartz. And that's the way I remember it, WB4AIO.
You're saying it was a wire, the quartz crystal? It wasn't a form like a square or rectangle?
Wow, you must not be receiving me very well. I said there was a metal holder with a spring attached that held a rectangle of quartz that looked like frosty glass.
Okay, but was it rectangular?
Yeah, you're not hearing me. I said a rectangle of quartz. Yeah, I guess you're not hearing me. You must be getting interference.
It's my brain, I swear. You said it each time, and I was concentrating so hard at trying to visualize it that I missed out on the word rectangle. Okay. Apparently that was a viable system to spring load it like that. I would always be afraid of deterioration at that point, and a change of frequency. I wonder if ever that happened. Did it ever get corrosion and the frequency would change or become unstable and all you'd have to do is take it out and clean the contact point?
Well, I never had a problem with that, but I've heard of people saying that some crystals go bad over time. I don't remember anybody saying how they figured out a way to fix it, but I do know that some people, you know, this crystal isn't active enough anymore, this crystal's gone dead. I've heard people say things like that.
Yeah, up on the spiderweb nets, 14.347 upper sideband, they were discussing it one day, NQ5H, and you know, they were at, the question was, what is the lifetime of quartz? When does it go bad? And he pondered it a second, and I knew the answer right away, but then he did give the right answer, and that is infinity. As far as we know, the quartz never changes state. It doesn't have a half-life or anything like that. So the failure point would be at the contact, I think.
Yeah, could be. The crystals for the BC-610 were even bigger than the FT-243 type. They were huge. They were like, I don't know, 2 inches high by 1.5 inches wide, and the contacts on the bottom were banana plugs. They were these flexible metal contacts that were identical to banana plugs. Those were the big crystals that the BC-610 used. By the way, there's somebody on eBay selling a big box, an original box full of BC-610 crystals, those huge crystals with many frequencies in the 3 and 4 megahertz range. And the picture he used to illustrate his eBay advertisement was one of those giant BC-610 crystals, and the frequency, believe it or not, was 3995 kilohertz.
Yes, you had told me that. Then that's really a coincidence. How about that? Maybe decades before our time, that was a hot frequency to be on. I'm trying to... My right now, let's see. I guess I answered my question. MP3 direct cut. To make sure I'm identifying often enough, let me turn it on. And... it didn't give me what I wanted. I need to navigate there somehow and find my CW ID. This is N2IRJ. That sounds like my friend Bill Grasso from New York. He doesn't say idea, he says idea. And one of our LibertyNet participants sure mangles a couple, about 6 words. It's pretty funny. Let's see here. I'm on histogram now, and when I'm modulating, it's mostly blue in the foreground, and then underneath it, there's a little bit of red, and then behind that, it's green, and which is the highest, and then that fades away. If that tells you anything, I don't know. Over.
I've never really played with the histogram, but I think it's showing you a spectral density over time, and I think the different colors have a different... persistence. I think maybe the green is the longest persistence and the other colors have less persistence. So it's giving you a readout of what the highest peaks have been at versus frequency in the last, you know, I don't know what the times are, but I'm just guessing, you know, one is like the last 20 seconds, the other's the last 10 seconds, and the other's the last 5 seconds, something like that.
Yeah, well, if this is any clue on both my transmissions and when I was receiving, that's when I noticed it, and when I started transmitting now, I observed it to also be on my signal. When I modulate, the peaks are red at the top of the blue, almost loaf of bread. It's almost a rectangle, but it's my envelope, you know. And then I guess let me be quiet for a moment. Yeah, the green fades out first. And you gave me a close enough idea. And as I think more about it and learn more about it, it can even be another added tool that makes me happy. Yeah, I've seen the crystal that you've spoken of, and it's amazing how large they were at one point. And of course, I remember the smaller ones too, which were still much larger than, you know, CB radio crystal. But it was so neat that you were able to be able to get in there and change it some yourself. I wonder how far you could change it before you would screw it up. Over.
Well, I think if you try to change it too much, what happens is that your machining of the crystal is uneven compared to the machining process that originally produced the crystal, which was done by some sort of professional process which ensures that its dimensions are even. Of course, the evenness of the dimensions, I would guess, probably determine the accuracy, stability, and activity. In other words, the tendency to oscillate only at one particular frequency of the crystal. And the more you deviate from a perfect mechanical structure, the more the extremely narrow selective properties of the resonance of the crystal are impaired. And if you impair those properties too much by washing over it with Ajax, the foaming cleanser, too much on one side or the other, or too much in the middle and not in the ends, or the reverse, you could eventually make it so that it doesn't oscillate properly. But I didn't move mine very far. If I recall correctly, I was only trying to move mine maybe less than a kilohertz. But I've heard of people moving them several kilohertz and having success with it. But it wasn't too long after I got my advanced class license and dropped the N from my call sign that I stopped worrying about that, because the Viking Valiant had a sort of okay VFO, but even on the Viking Valiant, once I got the TMC Master Oscillator, I started using that as the VFO for the Viking Valiant. I also used the TMC Master Oscillator as a VFO for the BC610. And when I got my T368, of course, that had a built-in Collins PTO, which was reasonably stable. So I quit in about 1973. I quit worrying about moving crystals. So it's been a long, long time, Marty. WB4AIO.
Indeed. I hate to be hitting you with these brain fog issues again and again from rectangular being missed, but I can't bring up. I can't find my CW ID. You know, in MP3, I can find MP3 direct cut and bring it up, and there's an empty screen showing. But I think I have to navigate or something to find it. Like maybe go to the Marty file or do something like that.
Well, you just have to go to Windows Explorer and just navigate to the folder that it's in, and then right click on it and open it. I don't know what folder you put it in, though, so maybe it's under Liberty Net Audio, maybe it's under Marty Misk, I don't know, but it's going to be under the D drive, and then some subfolder under the D drive is going to be where it is, but exactly where it is, I have no idea.
Did you say go to Internet Explorer? Because it brought up a web page instead, a news page. I might have opened up their Windows browser or something for the first time. I clicked out of it. I'm looking here for something else. I think I ran across this before with you, where there are two similar names. What I'm seeing is Internet Explorer. Yeah, that must be the... the internet browser. What did you say I need to find? Over.
Well, you just go to computer under the start menu, and that brings you. It doesn't say Windows Explorer. It doesn't say that, but that's what it is. Windows Explorer is totally different from Internet Explorer. Windows Explorer is just the built-in part of the operating system that lets you navigate around your folder structure. That's why I said that.
Okay, I found it, did it. I'm now There are titles from Kevin, General Ham Audio, Internet Downloads, Kevin's Sacred Folder, Laura Miscellaneous. There's Marty Miscellaneous. I want to say Marty Miscellaneous are those photographs, those screenshots, which I need to once again learn how to use. Yeah, that's all it is. It's the photographs. What the heck? Could I have sound effects? No. You helped me through this before, and now neither one of us can remember it. Let me see here. I don't know, LibertyNet Audio? I don't know. I guess I could try clicking on that. No, that shows me what looks like the files that I send you of the recordings. So, and I do that on Audacity. I'll turn it back to you into IRJ here. I can't remember. I'm telling you, I'm having one of my memory problems at the moment, and I can't remember where that is, and I need it every week.
Well, go to MP3 Direct Cut and just hit open under MP3. Go to File, Open, and see if it opens in a directory that has that in it. But it may be in that LibertyNet Audio folder. There are lots and lots and lots of files you put in that folder, and one of them might be the CWID. You don't know unless you look. If you remember the name of the file, and then you can look for it by name, you can cause that folder to be sorted by name, and then you can just look for it in alphabetical order. Another way to do it is you can invoke the search function in Windows, and you can search for that particular file name, and it'll find it that way. Lots of ways to find things.
Do you remember its name? You named it, I think, CWID16WPM or something like that?
I don't remember now, Marty. It might have been that, or it might have been N2IRJ CWID 16 word per minute, but something like that. Once you find it, commit to memory what folder it's in, or make a copy of it in another folder so you have it in another place where it's all by itself. That's another way to do it. It's a small enough file where it really wouldn't take up a lot of space on your hard drive to make a second copy of it.
Yeah, I'm on data D in the left pane, and that's where I'm supposed to be, right? I'm looking at screenshots, side effects. I think things were saved in some wrong folders. Like instead of Marty Miscellaneous, it should have gotten saved to screenshots.
My guess is, and I'm only guessing, but my guess is it really is somewhere in the LibertyNet Audio folder.
I'm looking, and this folder looks like a perfect duplication of FileZilla. And FileZilla does not have that in it, but I'm still scrolling and looking. And by the way, there's more than one thing in MP3 Direct Cut. There are about, I don't know, well, there's the Calabash, and then there's the 16 words per minute, and right now, with my brain fog, I can't remember how to bring up either one. It's terrible. I'm still scrolling. Nope. I went through the whole thing. What I'm looking at is a mimicking of the FileZilla folder, which I don't know if it's good or bad. Maybe I'm saving things twice or something. Let me back out of this, I'm back to the various file folder names, you know, such as Kevin's sacred folder, internet downloads, General Ham Radio, music, Power SDR data, radio manual, screenshots, sound effects. I guess I just have to wait a while until my brain starts working and find out what it's in, or if I have to even click again into a subfolder. I don't know.
Well, there are a lot of files in that LibertyNet audio folder, and you may have scrolled too fast. I believe it's called N2IRJ generated ID 16 word per minute or something like that. I'm not sure, but something along those lines. But anyway, it's certainly in one of those folders. What you can do is you can go to your computer, go to Data D, and then over on the left pane where it says Data D, right-click on it and click on Search. And then it brings up a search window, and you can just type in asterisk CW asterisk dot MP3 and search, and the asterisk is like a wild card. And you just search on asterisk CW asterisk dot MP3. And that will search for any MP3 file in your whole D drive that has CW in its title. It'll probably find quite a few things, but one of the ones it finds will undoubtedly be the right one. Then you just right-click on that to, first of all, make a note of where it is, make a note of what folder it's in so you can find it again, and just make a mental note so you never forget what folder it's in. And then you can just right-click on the search result of the correct file and tell it to open. Use the open command in the context menu that opens up when you right-click on it, and it will open an MP3 direct cut. Over.
Okay, I got stuck at the very first step. I've right-clicked on Data D. It brought up a menu. At the top it says Expand in dark print bold, include in library, open autoplay, open a new window, share with, restore previous version, scan, D colon, back virgule, format, copy, rename, new, and properties. What should I click on again? I think you gave me a word that doesn't exist here.
Well, are you in Windows Explorer, or are you in some sub-menu of MP3 Direct Cut? You've got to be in Windows Explorer for this to work.
I backed out, so I'm in Windows Explorer right now. Collapse. Oh, wait a second. I'm on computer. Let me go down to D-Data. Hold on. I thought I backed out. Let me click on Drive D again. I'm on Drive D, although it's not showing Drive D on the left side. On the left side, when I click on Data D, it takes me to different places. If I back space, it takes me back to the hard disk drives. It shows C, then D, and then underneath E. And it won't let me. Oh, yes, it will. It will let me right click on Data D. And it's that expand, include in library, open autoplay, blah, 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 copy, rename. I forgot the word you told me to look for. Over.
Search. The word is search.
Okay, I closed it out and started all over again. Windows Explorer. I left-clicked on Data D. And now I'm going to right click and see if there's a search. I wonder if it might be a sub name of one of these others. For example, there's the word new, and it shows folder or briefcase. Then there's rename, which doesn't have any subtitles. Copy, format, scan D, colon, back virgule, restore previous versions, share with, and that brings up a sub tab of advanced sharing. Open in new window, open autoplay, include in library, and that gives me documents, music, pictures, video, and create new library. And then the very top word, expand, there's nothing. I know you're getting tired of hearing this twice. Over.
Nope, the word search is not in a submenu. It's right there. It's right obvious. In my computer, it's the fourth one from the top. It's very obvious.
Does yours start with expand on the top?
Yep, mine has a few extra things yours doesn't have because, for example, I have a backup program called Acronis. So mine says expand. Beneath that, it says Acronis Recovery. Yours won't say that, though. Beneath that, it says browse with Irfan View. Yours might say that because I think you do have Irfan View on your computer. And then the fourth one down of many is search, dot, dot, dot.
I don't have that. And, of course, I don't have the other ones, not even the secondary one you said that I might have.
Well, you can still search. Just hit the start, just close out of all of that, and then just hit the start button. At the very bottom, there's a search box. Just type asterisk CW asterisk dot MP3, and that will search for any file on your computer that has CW in its title and is an MP3 file. Asterisk MP3, excuse me, no. Asterisk CW asterisk dot MP3, and that will initiate a search which should be just as effective as the other search I was telling you to go to. Obviously, some of the parameters in your computer aren't set up the same as mine, that's all.
In time, I hope to change that. It says no items match your search. But from this point, I still could select data D drive if that would help.
You've got to type asterisk CW asterisk dot MP3 and then hit return. I mean, maybe you forgot to hit return. And that will eventually bring up a search bar that will show you all of the MP3 files on your hard drives that have CW in the name. And that's got to work, Marty. It's got to.
Does capitalization matter, or are there any dots on CW? Any periods, I mean?
No. You search for asterisk CW, doesn't matter if it's capital or not. I did not capitalize it. Asterisk, period, MP3. Asterisk CW asterisk dot MP3, then hit return.
It brought me to the exact same place. No items match your search. Search again in either libraries, home group, computer, custom, or internet.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with your system then, because I know that the name of the file now is N2IRJ space hyphen space generated CWID 16 words per minute 9 minutes dot MP3, because I found my copy of it.
If I typed all of that into the search box, I should definitely find it exactly, right?
Well, yeah, but are you going to get all the spaces exactly right, blah, blah, blah? I don't think so. But typing in asterisk CW asterisk dot MP3 should find it too, because the asterisk is a wild card. In other words, it's any MP3 file with CW in its name will be found. On my computer, it found 5 such files.
What is in the asterisks? Right now I'm doing it a third time. I have asterisk CW, then what?
Well, when I say asterisk, you don't type out A-S-T-E-R-I-X. You just enter a shift numeral 8 to make an asterisk. That's what you're doing, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. It turns out that even though it's supposed to be an asterisk, it's labeled as being a star, and that's what's also showing up here. The Apple computer is more accurate. It gives a true asterisk and gives a true star if you want it. But anyway, I did the asterisk, and I didn't spell it out. I knew better than that.
Well, you type asterisk, CW, asterisk, period, MP, 3. Don't capitalize anything, and after you type the 3, hit the Enter key. And if that finds nothing, then there's something wrong with your search function, because it's got to be on your hard drive somewhere.
Yeah, something wrong with my search function. It brings up the same page, no matches to your search. Search again in libraries, home, group, computer, custom, internet. Maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe I need to select one of those and do the same thing. I'm clicking on computer. And guess what? I just found it by hitting computer, which is where we started off before we went to drive D. It's doing search results now. I can see the progress bar up above, and it already picked it up early on, right away. It's entitled N2IRJ hyphen generated CWID 16 words per minute. So I think we should have put the N2IRJ in, maybe, and the hyphen and the generated. Okay, it found it twice. And it's still three quarters of the way progressing. It's not done searching yet.
Well, the way I told you to search it should find it just as well. You don't have to put the whole title in. That's what the asterisks are for.
I see. Maybe if I would have put in N2IRJ separation, space, hyphen, space, generated, that would get me here. Well, I got here anyway. There used to be an easier way, but it does. I don't remember it. I have two of them, two hits. I guess it processes it in different ways so that it's not really a malfunction like a doubling of when the PC needs to be restarted. It's just discovering the same file in two ways. The search is completely done. So I guess I could click on one of these and it would open.
Well, right-click on it. Hold on a second. Okay, right-click on it, and near the bottom it will say Open File Location. That will open the folder that it's in. Do that first. Open the file location, and then it will tell you up at the top what folder it's in. And then memorize that so you can always find it. Then after you do that, then right-click on it and open it, and you can use it.
You know what? I was apparently brain fogged and giving you wrong answers, because it took me to where I first went. I instinctively went to Marty Miscellaneous, where I thought all of my screenshots were, which they are, but also there are a few MP3 files there, and there's an N2IRJ underscore 12 space WPM space capital I capital D. Somewhere in here there should be one that says 16. I think we're on to the right track. I see a LibertyNet excerpt. I see Calabash. Yes, we're in the right place. I don't know why I can't seem to find the 16, but it must be here. I'll open the Calabash one. We'll be needing it tomorrow anyway. In fact, I'll give you a sample.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
If you heard an echo, it was because I didn't pot down the microphone. Let's see here. All on key and put it back to you, and I'll just keep searching for the 16 word per minute more. Here it is. I found it. Here it is. Here it is. I just right-click and then hit open, I guess. Yes, it's there. Here goes. That was about a minus 18 dB, and like I said, my mic was still open. Let me check down in the mixer and see what it's set at. It appears to be maxed out. I know I always said it was recorded on the low side, but it still served us properly. Yep, it's maxed out both on the actual MP3 file that is moving along for the next 9 minutes, and in the bottom right pane of mixer, it's maxed out. They correspond to each other, I think. If you move one, you move the other. Let me do that. Well, not really, but usually that's the ultimate case. It does is it itself. Both are maxed out, so that's as loud as I can make it into IRJ.
Okay, Marty. Well, it was plenty loud. Plenty loud. Very clear, came through very clearly, as did Jimmy Durante. This is WB4AIO, and I hope you're hearing me all right, because the absorption is starting to take hold. Your signal is only about S9 right now, so it's gone down more than 25 dB from when it was at its peak this morning. Over.
Yeah, absorption's getting you too, but it's also getting the static. My noise floor is now an S2 on the beverage. And I think your signal might be an S7, but next go around I'll tell you.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Well, I'm glad you found the file, and you know it's in Marty Misc, and now you can never forget that your LibertyNet ID loop, or your general N2IRJ ID loop, whatever you want to call it, is located in the Marty Miscellaneous folder. You'll never forget that now.
Okay, and by the way, it seems like we maintained our 24 dB signal-to-noise ratio throughout the entire QSO. It should have been better at night, but unfortunately at night we had all that static bringing up the noise floor. I told you to an S5. The noise floor is a definite quiet S2 now, but of course your signal came down and it turned out to be S6. So let's see, 6 minus 2 is 4, 4 times 6, 24. Yeah, it's identical. Our signal-to-noise ratio, I think, stayed the same throughout the entire QSO before sunrise until now. Eventually, of course, your signal will be absorbed and we will lose that signal-to-noise ratio.
Yeah, well, the signal here, your signal has dropped 25 dB, but the noise has dropped, but not as much. So right now, I perceive there's a lot of hiss, a lot of just generalized hiss in the background of your audio that was not there before. I'm still understanding every word, but eventually I think you will be defeated by the hiss as the sun gets higher and higher in the sky. WB4AIO, Interim AE.
Your compressor brought up the Interim AE. Well, as to not overdo it, maybe I should go, but I don't want to go. I like this. It's really neat. I'm on the histogram function right now. Let me go up to the Panascode. It's near the bottom. Here it splits the screen in two, and on the bottom I see wave, like sine waves. When I said C, that makes sine waves with a superimposed harmonic on it, but it's real even sine waves. When I say that word C, it's much like on the Outer Limits, you know, except they're not Lissa Juice patterns, or however you pronounce it. Speaking of pronouncing things, we were talking about using Ajax foaming cleaner to cut the crystals to a higher frequency, sand them, you know, down, buff them down, abrade them down. it's in today's world, and maybe it even existed back then, I guess, is Bon Ami. Oh, maybe you could tell me the French name. Maybe it's really Bon Ami or something like that. Good friend, I hear it translates into a, over.
Yes, Bon Ami is the Americanization of the pronunciation. It's not really correct, but that's what everybody calls it. So I guess they even call it Bon Ami now, because Americans are notoriously bad at a French accent. But yeah, they have the little fluffy baby chick as their symbol, and instead of the foaming cleanser, their cosmic slogan is "Hasn't scratched yet," right? Which of course can refer to a baby chick or to a very gentle cleanser.
That's right. That's totally in my mind. Hasn't scratched yet. I used to have a really excellent windshield preparation technique procedure that I'd go through on my cars, and I could drive at high speeds and not use the windshield wipers. I know that sounds too good to be true, but they use it on airplanes, and up to a point till the window gets too dirty and the coating comes off. They don't have to use theirs either. And you can see better than if you rely on a windshield wiper, which makes a smear. And that's what you do, is you use Bon Ami and detergent and completely clean your windshield. And it doesn't scratch your windshield. It simply takes off the external invisible debris. Then what you do is you pour on, I forget the chemical's name. I want to say it's some sort of an acid, but it doesn't hurt the glass in any way. An isopropyl. It's sold under the brand name of Rain-X. Rain-X. You coat it with a Rain-X, and man, that is really hydrophobic stuff. When a droplet touches it, it just runs right off the window. It's downright amazing. Over.
Oh yeah, I've used that before. It's very effective. It doesn't last forever, but it is very effective. I guess it fills in all the microscopic pits in the glass. And in addition, as you say, it's hydrophobic. It's interesting. It's okay to be hydrophobic in our society, but it's not okay to be homophobic. I can't figure that out. WB4AIO.
Yes, and you get brownie points for being. Let me think. My brain fog. What's the opposite of hypo? Hyper. We ran across this in the car industry involving evaporators on cars with air conditioning. There are hydrophobic coatings that would make the drip off. The other theory was to let it pile up. Let's see. I can't think. I'm in one of those not thinking moons. But you know what joke I'm trying to make, and apply it to the certain community. You could get Bronner points. In other words, instead of being homophobic, you would be homo promoting. I can't think of the word.
Homophilic probably would be the correct word that they would use. Although I would never use the word homo to refer to homosexuals, because it's really, homo just means the same. And so, I don't know. It's more trashing of our language. But anyway, don't commit any hydrophobic acts today, Marty. That's my advice to you, because if you commit any hydrophobic acts, you can get in big, big trouble. Might lose a lot.
Roger. And it turns out that's exactly philic, the suffix I was trying to think of. I used to know that word off the top of my head when I dealt with, in the car industry, with the air conditioners and the dripping condensate, you know, what coating to put on. There were two theories, the one being phobic and the other being philic. And they both worked by different mechanisms to drain the evaporator of water, shed it so mold wouldn't grow in there. It's real important. Otherwise, you get air coming out that's stinky, moldy, gives you allergy. It smells like old, dirty socks that need to be washed, you know. modern cars seemingly all have this correction, but back in my day, I had to force the car company to install cleaning and protection. I tried from the factory, but they wouldn't go for it. The attorneys got in the way, and product liability, you know, they wouldn't let me coat it with Rep 60. And Rep 66, which is the slow drying stuff, that's a non-water soluble chemical which stops the mold growth. But anyway, those are the politics of working in corporate America. So yeah, anyway, since we can't solve this philic and phobic dilemma, and by the way, that is the true technical name in the water situation with Rain-X. Hydrophilic would mean that it does stick to the window, the water. And that's glass's default state, apparently, after it's been exposed to the elements. I'll ask you this about the Bon Ami. How do you, if you know, pronounce it correctly in French? Over.
I believe it's Bon Ami, but in this country, nobody calls it that. It's Bon Ami cleanser.
Well, I have to add something to my Virgils and Octothorpes, so I can now go around to stores and say, I want some Bon Ami, and then I'll get the usual deer in the headlights there, just like when I say Virgil.
Yep. Yeah. Most people probably have never heard that word in their life. Yeah, there's an AIOCWID that I found on my hard drive. That wasn't very high level.
Yeah, we had it at a higher speed, I think.
Yeah. It's also a lower frequency. I don't know what that frequency is. There we go, WB4AIO for ID.
I want to say it's not even 200 hertz. Try it again.
Looks like it's about 270 hertz, something like that.
Okay, I'm looking at the wrong place. Looking at the pan adapter, I was going to tell you it's 200, but I can't come up with a 270. Where do I need to look to find that?
I'm looking at my audio spectrum analyzer on the other computer.
Oh, that other program that won't run when I want it to on mine?
Yeah. You could use it to analyze my signal, though, because it analyzes what's ever coming in on the line input, and I'm coming in on the line input, if I recall correctly.
Well, let me learn to do that at least. And by the way, I'm still in the pan-scope function, which seems to be a combination of the pan adapter and the, maybe it's the audio wave profile underneath it. I'm guessing it looks that way. Tell me what to do so that I can bring that up. I guess I need to bring up the scope program. I'll do that right now. Scope, and I think you said each and every time you have to recalibrate it, and I cannot remember the things you said to do, logarithmic and all that happy noise, but I will at some point. Back to you, can tell me what to do now. The scope program's working, and it's currently showing my modulation.
Well, you just go to the function, the tab on the scope program. Soundcard Oscilloscope has a series of tabs along the top edge. Go to the one marked frequency. That's the one that gives you the spectrum analyzer function. Then along the top edge of the spectrum analyzer graph, there are a series of checkboxes. You want to check the dB box, and you want to uncheck the auto scale box. Once you've done that, I'll tell you the next thing to do.
All that done successfully.
Okay, now on the bottom edge of the on the bottom edge of the spectrum analyzer screen, you will see a checkbox marked log, which is just short for logarithmic. This is along the bottom edge, the extreme right bottom edge of the spectrum analyzer graph, and you do want to check the log box at the bottom there. Over.
Okay, I did that, and I didn't have much time to read, but I think I saw something a little over 100 hertz and a secondary one a little to the right of that. Over.
Well, I'll just be quiet and just let the CWID run, and you should see that it's approximately 267 hertz. Here, I'll be quiet. So there you go.
Yeah, the best resolution I could say is maybe 275 or something. And what did you say you got yours down to?
Well, I'm looking at the main frequency box, which is sort of like the bin readout in the Power SDR software. It's approximate. It's not exact. But if I stop talking and I just let the CWID run, that main frequency box shows 267, 265, somewhere in there. So that's probably pretty close to what the actual frequency is.
Yeah, I was eyeballing it when I said 275. Go ahead, give me the CWID again, and I'll look in the main frequency box and tell you what my main frequency box says, since we've shown before that maybe our bins aren't working exactly the same on our two different types of radios. Over.
Yeah, okay. I guess I have to be quiet, so I'll be quiet for a moment. The level CWID is only producing about 100 watts out of the transmitter, so that's compared to a kilowatt on peaks with my voice. So I guess currently the level is set to be about 10 dB down.
Yeah, I'm coming up with most of the time 271, roughly. And what did you say it's supposed to be?
Well, I'm reading 267, but it could be that my transmitter is 5 hertz off or something.
I see. Well, we're almost to the point of splitting hairs. Not yet, but this is very good now. I have a very good way of using this program. I wish we had this ability on single sideband to gather more data, but it's sure nice to do so on a CW tone. I guess an AM carrier, too.
Yeah, I guess I would have no problem meeting the ID requirements if I just let this thing run continuously, because it just never stops IDing me. There it goes. It never stops. It's just endless WB4AIO.
Yes. Unlike my foresight, you didn't put the 9-minute delay in there.
Oh yeah, it has a 9-minute preamble, a silent preamble, but I just highlighted the ID itself, and then I hit F4 to go into the repeat mode, and it's just repeating the ID itself. But if I highlighted the whole file, then it would do it every 9 minutes.
Okay, I understand. Is it in an MP3 direct cut? Where do you have it stored?
I'm playing it through MP3 direct cut at the moment. That's my favorite MP3 program.
Yeah. Is it possible for me to highlight mine in such a way that it would eliminate the 9-minute segment, and I could just do the beginning? For example, the Calabash recording is so short that I can just hit on the ups or side, as you taught me, in the center of the screen, select all, and then I hit infinity, and it just keeps playing over and over again. Is there any way for me to change the CW idea with 9 minutes, you know, like highlight something and give it a command, and then it'll do like yours over and over again.
Yes, there is a way to do that. You just have to manually highlight, not the whole file, but just manually highlight the part you want to repeat. So that would work.
Well, in a moment, I'll be fighting fire with fire. You're throwing out your WB4AIO call sign. But there's no there's no virgule, and I won't even mention da. Okay, I'm bringing mine up right now. It's at the 9 minute point. Let me take it back to the beginning. And I'll have to play it to find out where the end is. Okay, looking at the amplitude, I really have trouble telling. There's a yellow line, dotted line, that goes vertically. Maybe that signifies the ending point. It's roughly a 9 second recording. And it corresponds to the timestamp there of a tad over 9 seconds, I think. So that vertical yellow line must be the place. I correct me if it's not. I'll try it. Let me try it. And you can tell me what button to push next. Do I need to press the top one, you know, to select all, or just hit the play button at this point? Over.
Well, if you hit select all, you'll lose your manual selection. Sounds like I have a little hiss in there, a little buzz. Need to solve that problem. Anyway, if you hit select all, you'll lose your manual selection, so you definitely don't want to do that. If you just hit the infinite loop button, that will play whatever your selection is in an infinite loop, a WB4AIO.
Okay, it's actually saying that it's 6 minutes 32 seconds. And what's the relevance of that yellow vertical line? The dashed line, since I highlighted the area, I was going to say it disappeared, but I guess it really is there. I just didn't see it at first. It's right on the edge. Okay, I'll hit that and give you a taste of your own medicine. Now I need to learn how to stop it. I guess I'll just hit the stop. And then I will unhighlight it, I guess. And now I will put the select all and put it on infinity. And now it's all back to its normal fashion. The reason I chose a slower speed because Canadian CW requirements are 12 words per minute. So I made it so our northern friends could copy, and yet it was fast enough to not be, you know, like 5 words per minute. But I got an email emphasizing how slow it was. At 12, I think. I know the American tier is at 13, but back then the Canadians were at 12. So what I did is I moved it up to 16 words per minute, and I preceded it with the word day. So I figured someone who's a little bit rusty in CW will get advance notice that something's about to happen, and they'll start paying attention. That gives them a a warning kind of, so they're not caught off guard trying to catch up halfway through the call sign. And I think it's effective, and it's almost up to the legal limit of 20 words per minute anyway. Okay, it's working as it should. In another, 7 minutes, it's going to cycle the CWID. At least if I have the microphone down. I'll unkey and send it back to you.
Okay, Marty, N2IRJ, WB4AIO. Let's see if this program works here. Oh, yeah. There you go. Answer the phone, Marty.
Boy, that sounds really real. It turns out that I didn't address your comment in the last round. You said about that pitched noise that appeared. And, yes, it's true. It's on your audio. And then you did something which momentarily stopped it or diminished it greatly. I couldn't hear it, and now in this transmission I hear it again. Over.
Yeah, I know. I've apparently got some sort of ground loop or something between the mixer board and the computer, so I've got to solve that problem, but it's not a big deal. Here's how people react when they hear your call sign, Marty. That's how they usually react.
Well, as long as the people are nice babes like that, maybe that's better than nothing.
Yep, there you go. And here's how people react when they hear W9ART. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe that's not a person.
I used to have that for about the first 10 years living here, but unfortunately the neighbors called for the death of the roosters in the area because they would do what a rooster does come dawn. And as far as I can remember, the court ruling came out that the roosters were here first, and the mooing law came into place, the one where people, yuppies, would come from New York City and try to get the farmer who was here for the last 100 years to get rid of his cows because they would bother them by mooing. And then they did the same thing with the Bengal Tiger Preserve, which is maybe 2 miles from here. They knew they were moving into the preserve. That was the name of the development, which was right next to the preserve where the lions, the tigers, I guess I should say, Bengal tigers roamed and were fenced in. And then they started complaining about the smells and the sounds of the cats and all that stuff, and took them to court. And that one, they prevailed eventually. And I don't think they prevailed in the rooster case, but I think the roosters just died of old age, and the people figured it's not worth fighting the neighbors over, so they didn't bring them back. Although I could have sworn that maybe a year ago, one morning, I heard it loud and clear as though one were still alive. So I was happy to hear that.
Okay. WB4AIO. Okay, lots of fun on the audio front. I guess I'll kill the sound from the computer, and I'll have to transform or isolate the feed from the computer into the mixing board. It's not a regular hum. It's like this high-pitched harmonics of hum, and like a almost like a buzzing sound. Oh well, not a big deal. I guess I will just not worry about it for the present, and don't need to play the sound effects, and I don't generally use the CWID, but I guess it's there if I ever decide to use it. This is WB4AIO. That's WB4 Aeschylus Icarus Oedipus.
During that transmission, it was detectable in the beginning, again at a very low level, not worth worrying about. And as time went on, it faded into nothingness. I couldn't hear it at all. So, Yeah, if you can think of any way to improve my AC cleanliness in terms of ground loops and all that, I'll get filters and transformers and so forth as we go along, too, if you feel that it's necessary. Do you need a transformer like I have, like one of my Ebtecs or something?
Yeah, something like that. It needs to be stereo because the feed from the... from the computer is an unbalanced stereo feed, and right now I cut it off while I was talking about it. That's probably when you heard it disappear. I just cut it off by switching off those inputs. But it feeds directly into the line input of channels 3 and 4 of the Behringer mixing desk. And apparently there's a slight buzz that's associated with it. I know that the computer itself is not creating a buzz because when I listen directly to it, which is what I listen to on my speakers, there's no buzz whatsoever. But apparently when it couples into the mixer board, it's some sort of buzz is being transmitted along with it. I'm already using all three of my Art DTI high-fidelity stereo isolation transformers, audio isolation transformers. I'm using them on the IQ output of the Flex radio, on the IQ input of the Flex radio, and on the audio output of the Flex radio. So this Flex radio has an incredible number of connections and cables and whatnot, but it's totally transformer isolated. But I guess I need another Art DTI or equivalent high fidelity transformer between the computer line output, the main computer line output, and the input of the Behringer mixer, because there is a little bit of a buzz coming through mixing in with the audio. Darn it.
Yeah, well, you know how grounding up here got rid of my AC hum, grounding the Flex hardware to the PC, or at least it minimized it. Maybe I need some other solution rather than direct grounding. But I'll let you worry about that when you come out here and we resurrect QRO. Then we'll see if more problems arise, or we could add things in advance based upon our knowledge of RF and just label them as optional. They are probably giving us a factor of safety, or maybe then again go back to Pat's theory: if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah, well, you don't have any hum right now that I can detect whatsoever, so I think that's a non-problem. And I don't have any hum either, except when I pot up those two inputs. So I guess I need, I don't know if it's grounding I need or if I need an isolation transformer. Isolation transformers seem to cure a lot of ills in the audio realm, though, particularly when you're dealing with unbalanced audio. Frankly, I wish there was no such thing as unbalanced audio and that all inputs and all outputs of all audio gear from consumer to professional was all balanced, because it just works so much better rejection of noise. I mean, to me, it's just crazy to use ground as one of your signal paths for a low-level, fragile, high-fidelity audio signal. Just crazy to use the noise-filled ground lead as half of your signal path. That's just, to me, that's just insane. I don't know why they ever did it that way. That's just like the old original antique telegraph circuits, or the, I think even some of the original experimental telephone circuits. They actually use the earth as one conductor. But they very quickly realized that the balanced circuit, not referenced to ground, is a far better way of transmitting audio, and eventually that's how all the telephone networks evolved. They got rid of the ground connection. WB4AI.
No kidding. I never knew that history about the telephone and fine business and all the rest. And I certainly agree. I know the reason, and you do too. It has to do with cost. It was cheaper for them to engineer it and do it that way and just stamp out a bunch of Chinese connectors to fit up to that one wire going back to ground. Probably not even through a shield, a microphone cord. And, I don't even think they're really saving, actually. I mean, does it cost more money to make the kind of wire we want? I guess we would require a shield on it. That would put the price up. But other than that, the internal workings of the radio just need to be changed in the front where the audio section is, and then it could accept the balanced input.
Well, I guess it is more expensive. You need an extra conductor for the wires. Each wire would have two conductors in a ground instead of one conductor in a ground. And you need a few extra components to make a balanced differential input stage and a balanced differential output stage. But these days it's a lot cheaper because you can do it all with a few resistors and capacitors and op amps. In the old days, to get a balanced input, you had to usually use a transformer. But today you really don't have to use a transformer. You can do it all with active circuitry, and that's a lot cheaper than a transformer. Over.
Roger. Well, it would be nice if my CB radio 30 years ago would have had that. But I don't think the bulk of the people buying them really cared one way or the other, especially since it was in mobile use and there was background noise even with the windows up. But that Fujitsu 10 CB, which is a rarity, it was made for Toyotas and custom fit into the dash. It has wonderful performance. It might even be possible to open up the... I know it's possible to change the modulation gain. It's fixed from the factory, but I found the resistor, and I have a potentiometer in line. Right now, it's a little too hot, but I parked the car in the backyard, and once it got filled with animal life and debris and their droppings, I didn't want to even get into that. So that's the story there. But Fujitsu 10 made a damn good radio.
I don't know anything about that, but I do know that the broadcast gear for a long, long time has been using balanced inputs exclusively, balanced inputs and balanced outputs. And they wouldn't do it any other way. I mean, they just realized early on the susceptibility of the equipment to noise was greatly reduced. The susceptibility to ground loops was basically eliminated. And the susceptibility to a common mode RF interference was greatly reduced. I think if there was no unbalanced audio at all, that way over half, I don't know how much, but way over half of the RFI problems that ham operators have would be eliminated.
That's right. N2IRJ at 9:48 a.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time on Friday, September 27th, 2013, date stamping this recording, audio date stamping it. I want to say I'm soon going to be doing that paperwork you've been after me to do. But not the check writing just yet. I need to check with the attorney or the bank. I have to send this stuff. And Laura informed me yesterday that I received a stern letter from my attorney about waiting so long to return his paperwork so that he could arrange my checking account so that I could pay the nursing home for my mother. So thank God I'm getting out of that horribly depressed phase that I went through. Over.
Very good, Marty. Here, somebody is coming up to the mic who wants to make a comment on that, too.
Holy mackerel.
How you doing, Vic? You know what we need to do someday, and it doesn't have to be done immediately, but thought about. I need to learn how to put a voice on Miss's email when she comes in. It's rare that I get an email from her, so I'm willing to have maybe two. I don't want you to feel slighted that someone's competing with you, though. You're still the birdies. but maybe I should make her a purring kitty cat. That would be a more subdued, lower sound, which would allow you to continue your supremacy with the loud birds chirping, and yet it would still give her love because she feels so unloved.
Oh, that's easy to do. You just set up another male filter, and then whenever an email comes in with her email return address or whatever, you just tell it to play a sound. You've got the correct plug-in in Thunderbird to do that.
What was that?
Good demonstration of inserting Vic there. Yeah, where would I get the kitty cat noise, or you know, purring? It's probably available on the internet, maybe at the site you use to get the birdies, or have you ever considered holding the microphone near the vocal cords, or the mouth, or touching the body, even, and recording your own cats?
Oh, yeah, sure. That would be easily done. I could record it myself, or probably there's just so many audio files on the internet now. It's just unbelievable. You can find a recording of almost anything for free download, so probably you wouldn't have to record it.
What was that?
I said you wouldn't have to record it.
Yeah, I copied you through the whole thing. Vic's the one having earwax.
What was that?
You have earwax, Vic.
I think he got it that time.
Good.
That crunchy sound you hear in the background is being brought to you by courtesy of the ionosphere.
Oh, thank you, Vic.
My CWID just went off, so N2IRJ.
WB4AI.
N2IRJ.
Try Earth to Marty.
Earth to Marty.
Yes, I guess he's in orbit right now.
Yeah, Marty's in orbit right now.
I'm really glad you captured those sacred, special moments of Nat history. I wonder what would happen if I changed my CW ID to Vic, saying N2IRJ. He might get insulted or something. I guess we shouldn't do it.
WB4AIO, that's really my call sign. The preceding was a recorded message from W1WCR.
You know what? I have the speakers up, and Laura heard it in the other room, and she's laughing. She laughed before, too, when you played something. I forgot what it was now, but it was the very first thing you played.
Yes, I've got a million of them.
Actually, she probably can't hear my voice because I'm in the ham room, and she's only hearing one side of the conversation through the FM speaker. It's a really nice thing to have. You're really right about that. And I repositioned the antenna. Instead of having it on top of the console, rack console that holds the audio processing gear and so forth, I placed it on the floor, lower, by about 4 feet. And I figured that there would be more signal density because that's where the speaker is, near the floor. I figured I was wasting some of my FM signal going up to the Kennelly heavy side layer. And so far, so good. It's going to deprive my neighbors of being able to hear me at range like I can hear them. But it'll be better for me trying to get this thing. If it were centrally located in the house, the transmitter, maybe then I could even do the whole house.
There you go.
The best thing that ever happened to 75 meters is the Liberty Net. And that's a true statement.
Nothing like capturing real life in action. Yeah, Laura's making all kinds of noises over in the bedroom. She's hearing your feet at least.
Yep, well, at least she's hearing half. She just has to imagine your half. Maybe that's what's making her laugh.
Yeah, maybe. Would it technically be possible to make my voice go over that speaker? Or would it be a nightmare? Or is it just downright impossible?
We'd have to install some kind of switching matrix because normally it receives whatever the Sony speaker receives. And of course, you don't want your own voice over the Sony speaker. So therefore, it doesn't go over the remote speakers either. But there would be a way, I suppose, to switch it so that it was going out to the... In other words, instead of being fed off the Sony speaker's feed, it would be fed directly, say, from some other point in the circuit that would have your voice in it, like maybe the line input to the computer. But you wouldn't always want it that way, because if you switched it so that the remote speaker came off the line input to the computer, then you wouldn't be able to play recordings over it, because the line input to the computer does not have a recording that you're playing in Audacity. So you'd want to switch to be able to switch the FM speaker so that it could be fed from the line input to the computer or the speaker output from the computer. So you see, there are two different situations, and you'd have to deal with both of them. The only way to do it probably is a switch. WB4AI.
Yeah, it's really way down the list on priorities, if at all. It's just that she's forced to listen to her tinny PC during the Liberty Net, and she listens to the stream. That way she can hear both sides, and here she could be hearing local audio. I guess she could be hearing Nyssa too, or should she already be hearing Nyssa? Well, maybe not. I don't know. On Skype, back channel, would the FM thing pick up? I want to say it did once, but I can't say that for sure. I think you told me no.
Only if you have it set up so that Nyssa comes out of the Sony speakers, then whatever comes out of the Sony speakers, that's what the remote speakers also hear. So it's easy to figure out.
Yes, you made it simple for me. She just hollered over. She hollered over, "I hear Nyssa." So I do have them up during the Liberty Net, at least to some degree. So it's enough where she did hear me talking to Nyssa back channel.
Well, maybe she means she just hears Nyssa when Nyssa is talking over the air. Of course, she'd hear that, right?
Right. I'll have to get a better clarification of her, because one time I asked her and she said no, and now she's saying yes. So maybe you need to ask her the question over the air, and then she'll give an answer since she's not hearing me.
That's all right. We'll talk about it later. We don't need to use a 300-mile HF radio circuit to enable a conversation that's down the hallway.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. She's laughing now.
I'm just looking at my search results. I have one heck of a lot of MP3s that have N2IRJ in the title. I think I have thousands of them.
Well, fortunately, terabyte hard drives are cheap and easy today, so I guess saving them is okay. You can't, once you do away with them, you can't bring them back. So saving history, and let entropy be the final judge.
Yeah. I've got lots of strange titles, like there's N2 IRJ pre-net test, N2 IRJ processor on 1, N2 IRJ processor on 2. Here's a mysterious one, N2 IRJ push-pull. I have no idea what that means. N2 IRJ test tones, N2 IRJ very careful phonetics. Now this is a good one. I remember this one. Let's bring that up. Let's see how you give your phonetics, Marty. Go ahead there, Marty.
November 2, India, Romeo, Juliet, N2 IRJ.
I got it.
November 2, India, Romeo, J, N2, India, RJ.
It's becoming clearer.
November 2, India, RJ. N2, India, RJ.
Wow. I'm writing this down.
RJ. 2, 2, 2.
Very important to emphasize that too.
IRJ. India, Romeo, Juliet. November 2, November 2, N2, N2, 2, 2, IR, Romeo, Juliet. I, R, Romeo, Juliet.
I, R, Romeo.
Juliet.
Over.
Yep, okay, thank you. Got that, Marty.
That's funny, that's like the IUU one. I did that once for my great aunt. I did a splicing session. The whole recording was like a half an hour. It was a gas. She got insulted by it, and I thought it was so funny. I recall that there was a time more than once where I had to repeat my call sign in that way to a distant station who couldn't copy perfectly, and it was a strange copy. And I see you added a few little extra loops and duplications of certain segments. So fortunately, I never got that radical. Maybe Stan might do something like that, though. I don't know, with his call sign.
Ah, yes. Well, anyway, what fun. What memories. When I'm 80 years old, we'll go back to some of these recordings and I'll say, boy, I sounded so young when I was 57.
Yeah, that's exactly what came to my mind when I was speaking to Margaret Carpenter the other day, that woman who was a friend of Gloria's as a child, and then as a 30-year-old would visit her at her house, and she was a happy, satisfied housewife, and I think they had a really good family environment. And anyway, I'd go over there and play with them, and you know, they had that mini bike in the backyard and all that stuff. And when I heard her voice after not having heard it in 40 years, well, I won't say that, 30 years, I could tell it's true. Age does change your voice. I remember how it used to sound when I was a child. And now it had that element of elderly graveliness to it. And I guess the same holds true for my voice. If I go back on my cassette tapes to when I was a child, especially, I think this is even up until 1969, so I would have been 11, I guess, years old. I'm much higher pitched and much smoother, I think, without that graveliness, which is not too bad, but I've noticed it in the aging process. Used to be when I was young, the telemarketers would think I was a girl, a little girl, and they'd say, like, little Missy, did you get your mommy on the phone and stuff like that? Over.
Ah, yes. Yes, indeed. Let's see what other signals we can receive on the remote receiver here. We've got, this power SDR can do some amazing things. Let's see what's happening up on 7290.
Yeah, my call is WA1HLR.
Oh,
it's Tim. WA1H is in horrendous. L is in Lewisius, and R is in Rotundus.
Yep, there we go. I guess he's up on 7290.
Okay. That recording I've heard before, and boy, that's a good one to keep. And it's really reflecting his sense of humor, too, where he even admits that he has a gut like I do with the rotundus.
Yes, hellacious, Lewisius, rotundus. However, I don't think Lewisius is a word. He just made that up, so it sounds sort of, it rhymes with the first word, and it starts with L, or should I say yell.
Now that is a hard question, the second one, the yell or the L. If it's just the L, Lewisius, then you could say it's being of a state like a person with the name Lewis.
It sounds a little bit like delicious.
Yeah, it does.
Your signal is going through some interesting nulls, Marty. It's almost like somebody turns the pot all the way down and then turns it all the way back up again. It's nulling itself, like the layers, multiple layers are in play here.
Yeah, my noise level's down to an S2 still. It's holding there, and it'll probably stay there throughout the day with the beverage, and you're up to an S5, but yeah, you're doing the up and down floats as well. Still copyable, every word, but if you wanted to do any other experimentation like 40, if you think that's formed, we could talk. The Johnstown guys used to talk every morning on 40 around the time we first started here. So I suspect the propagation is in, although I can't remember what time of the year that was or what part of the sunspot cycle, but it's, to me, in the early days, it seemed like it was always.
Yeah. Well, right now your signal is down quite a bit from when we started, and like I say, that I think a multiple layer propagation effect is in play here, because just in the last 5 or 10 minutes, you've gone through several complete cancellations. It's like some sort of complete phase cancellation occurs, and then it comes back up and it peaks up again. And when it peaks up, it's still totally high fidelity and totally readable and a reasonable signal-noise ratio above the hiss. But when it goes into the phase cancellation mode, if that's indeed what it is, then it's you actually drop below the broadband hiss, which is the background noise at the moment. There was one burst of that evil line noise, too. But it was just one burst, and then it went away. But if that came on, I would totally lose you. This is WB4AIO.
N2IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey. I'm glad you told me that. If I suddenly seem to have deafness on your end, I'll understand why, and I won't panic. I'll assume it's the line noise just not letting you hear. Does it ever stay on constantly, that line noise that knocks me out, whereby I could wait an hour and you still couldn't hear me?
Well, we've been on here for several hours, so probably I'm going to sign off pretty soon anyway. If you have anything else that's important to tell me, you should tell me now before we sign out. And, I've really had a great QSO and a lot of fun and a lot of memories and a lot of playing around. But I need desperately to clean up this house. It's a terrible mess, and I might be having company on Saturday night, so I want to have the house looking good for the potential company.
Understood. Let me say 7-3 now, And it's probably not necessary for us to do a 40-meter test. All this talking we're doing is, of course, fun, but it's largely helped us work out the bugs. Oh, here comes my ID. Back to you.
Okay, very good. I will let you go, Marty. I've had a lot of fun, and I'm still copying you. I copied you continuously from the beginning to now, and that's several hours, so it's really been a great QSO, and we've proved that this antenna system is reasonably efficient and can make it through even the high absorption part of the morning. And probably the high absorption part will not be quite so high as we approach December. So we're going to have a few months of pretty good propagation between us, I predict. And I guess the 572Bs are doing a reasonable job of keeping my signal where it should be in the signal and noise department. So it's great talking to you on 3666. And especially was great hearing Laura last night on this frequency. That was a lot of fun. Okay, 73, good luck in the contest, and I guess we'll talk before the Liberty Net, but make sure that everything, don't take any risks, don't do any experiments that would be risky, because it's possible that I will not be available to do the backup recording for the net that evening, so bear that in mind. It's going to be possibly all on you. N2IRJ in the Great Salt Flats of Central New Jersey, where the Radio Corporation of America develops so many advanced radio communications products and broadcast products and other devices. This is WB4AIO near Beaverdale, Pennsylvania, where the beavers are just crawling all over the place. And the air is cool in the Allegheny Mountains. WB4AIO saying 73, and good luck in the contest.
That's a very nice sign-off. I'll touche it with the date stamp of this audio recording. The current time is 14 hours, 12 minutes, 47 seconds on Friday, coordinated universal time, the date being September 27th, 2013. I know I gave it earlier, but I didn't give the true time. I gave just the local daylight savings time crap. And normally when we do a net at night, it drops over to the next day, UTC, so I have to say that, you know, when it ended. But it started on Saturday, even over there. Well, maybe not. No, I think it starts. I think LibertyNet starts 1 in the morning, 1 hour, 0 minutes, or something like that. And when we scroll back, the other one is, I think it's 2 hours and then 1 hour when we started an hour earlier during the week. And it's the next day, so I have to go through the pain in the butt of putting that in the metadata. Oh, it's been great, and it's our way of utilizing life in a non-destructive way that allowed us to operate as human beings the way we should. So I'll keep this audio file and take a rest first, and then name it, and then I have to name the other one. I'm going to overburden with you. Maybe you can listen to it while you're running. Well, you'll be running a vacuum cleaner maybe, so maybe you won't be able to hear it. We'll have to give you central vac. I have a central vac unit for that house. That could be a neat project for you, but I'm sure you're rolling your eyeballs. I've mentioned that long ago in the past, but I'm not pushy on that, you know. But it really does make the air sweet in there. It doesn't let any of the fine particles come back again on you after going through the bag that picks up most of the dust. It's very quiet, too. You could listen to episodes of the Liberty Net while vacuuming. Okay, N2IRJ in Jackson, New Jersey, clearing out now. It's it says now that it's 10... 15 a.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, which corresponds to 14 hours, 15 minutes UTC. 7-3, N2IRJ, clearing out. And I don't know, maybe I should circulate around the band, or if you want, I'll leave it parked here, or what do you what do you think? You already signed. I shouldn't be asking you this. Well, freelancer, you don't have to answer.
Okay, I don't know if you're in the receive mode or not, but I, I'll just leave everything tuned up on this frequency. But I would love to hear your recording. Send the recording. I can listen to it while I do my cleaning and other work. So do send the recording. I when the vacuum's running, I can't hear it. But a lot of the cleaning I'll be doing will not involve the vacuum. It'll be involving other tasks. So I would enjoy listening to the recording while I did my work. So 73. And talk to you later. It's 10:16 Eastern Daylight Satan Time. So take it easy. WB4AIO is closing down for now.
N2IRJ closing down for now. If you're still around in the listening mode, my Audacity recording seemingly failed. The record button is pressed, and yet it's not recording. It's stuck at 2 hours, 10 minutes, and 32 seconds. So I guess I'll just hit the stop button.